Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky, here we are, the 12th day of December, 12-12-13. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. And I welcome you to the conversation. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the entrance to the chat room, which has many of its usual occupants beginning to filter in about now. You'll also find the Listen Live button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. If you're on a mobile device, though, or would like to be, you can always listen via TuneIn or Stitcher Internet Radio, both of which have the horn listed. You'll also find the PayPal button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That is where we... That and the traditional mail address are where we keep this whole thing running. Took a little bit of a fundraising break last night because of the kindness of our Waggy and Scott and Linda and Tony and Asa and Sal. But we'll get back at it this evening, looking to raise $150, 15 bucks, 10 bucks a piece, two at 75, three at 50, one at 150, you know, that kind of thing. It is the last update that I had, by the way, before we jumped into Thorn in the Side Thursday. The last update that I had on our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, came to me earlier today, this afternoon. And I was informed by Thomas that he and his lovely wife had driven up to Lakewood yesterday evening. He said, we arrived shortly before 6 p.m. Bill was out for an MRI. We waited. We were finally allowed to see Bill about 7:30 p.m. He was sleeping. I woke Bill up, and he was pretty much out of it with the medications he was on. He could assist me with his move status. You know, he's in the middle of a move with all of this. He could not assist me, I think, is what Thomas meant. He couldn't even tell me who his mover is. And Thomas notes that there's a bit of a problem insofar as helping and advocating for Bill because, well, he doesn't have anybody in there who is technically family, which is one of those problems with the HIPAA law. So I'm hoping some things will happen whereby maybe Thomas can be an advocate so that Bill can consent for him to be an advocate for his care. But he is still in hospital. He is still receiving treatment, and I'm very happy to hear that news. Don't really have any information in terms of diagnosis, so I will update as I know more. And thank you all for your kind thoughts and good wishes for Bill's recovery. Thank you very much, Karen, for getting us started this evening. Much appreciated. We now only have $125 to go with fundraising. You know, Randy in PA reminded me toward the end of the program last night. He said, Bob, you can't do this. He said, it's nice to have folks help, but That's how you wind up. That's how the horn winds up getting in a hole. Said Randy, keep fundraising. So I heard you, Randy. And he says loud and clear on my Mac. Thank you. Thank you, Randy. If we get any more in the way of a Mr. Stress update in the course of the program, I will absolutely share it with you. I'm sure Thomas will tell me what he knows. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, you know, sometimes, and not just sometimes, rather often, I'm afraid, Thorn in the Side Thursday becomes a repository of things that have sort of rolled over out of the stack from other night's programming, stuff we didn't get to. And, of course, this being the 12th day of December, yeah, okay, I guess we're officially entering the 12 days of Christmas now. Is this Partridge in a... No, tomorrow, I guess, is Partridge in a Pear Tree Day. But it seems the more modern incarnation of that is that the 12 days of Christmas are met by 12 days of right-wing idiocy in the form of outrageous crap that right-wingers say. To wit, and I sort of got going on this earlier today, to wit, Megyn Kelly, you know, a couple of nights ago, we were talking about how the Gretch tried to steal Festivus. Gretchen Carlson, the Gretch. And in regard to that, I had a note from Steve, who said, Bob, I was listening to the Gretchen Carlson bullshit, and I need to chime in. Bob, I probably pass for what many would call an observant Catholic. I attend Mass every Sunday. I pray the rosary on a regular basis, and I'm a Eucharistic minister. However, I'm gay and have a partner of 13-plus years. I feel the need to chime in here. I, for one, find Bill Donahue and the likes of him and his one acolyte repugnant. Their ilk cheapen my belief in Yeshua and his teaching. To listen to this silliness about a monument in a park is utterly disgusting. How I would love to hear someone lament the trivialization of their faith by having a stone carving placed in a park for birds to shit on. Bob, I just don't understand people getting this upset over something like this. Maybe that's the point. These are crocodile tears to drum up viewers to Fox, Radio Rwanda, and money for Bill Donahue. I guess this passes as religious persecution? Then, of course, the Gretch invokes the children's. Frankly, a sensible person could see it as a teaching moment that we have a constitution that respects multiple views and gives them equal access to the public sphere, no matter how much we may disagree with them. Then again, I guess that requires an ounce of creativity and introspection. It also, Steve, requires that the people spewing this garbage, and we have a note on garbage too, by the way, the people spewing this garbage actually agree that we live in a country of diverse beliefs and that those beliefs are protected by the Constitution. I don't mean to get all banging the shoe on the podium or anything, but how long am I going to have to say this before I am taken seriously? This is a country that is dealing with an insurgency. Insurgencies do not like the present government. Insurgencies seek to topple the governmental structures of a given polity in order to replace it with their own. Bill Donahue would have this country ruled from Rome by the Pope. I'm not kidding. That's not anti-Catholicism. That's anti-Bill Donahue-ism. And I am certainly anti-Bill Donahue because that man is dumber than a... Oh, Jesus Christ. He's dumber than a bag of ears. He and the rest of the right wing in this country are opposed to the form of government that we particularly presently have, and they seek to tear it down and to destroy it and to replace it with a theocracy. Granted, if they ever get their way, it will be interesting to see them then turn on each other, because after they've dealt with the Jews and the Muslims and the non-believers, and they get their little theocracy in place, then it's going to be hell among the yearlings for Protestant versus Catholic, Baptist versus Methodist, Presbyterian versus Lutheran. And all I can suggest to the Unitarians is that you keep your passports in order and be ready to flee at a moment's notice. But that's the truth. That's factual. There is an insurgency in this country that seeks, don't believe me, go ask Mark Levin. He wants the several states to call a constitutional convention to get rid of the government that we have. They say it publicly. He's charging people money to read a book in which he suggests it. Dr. Bill has opined at length on it a few weeks back. It's not a joke, and they're not crazy. Their goal is to destroy self-government and instill in it a sort of cornpone Iran. Let that sink all the way in. Because I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. I'm trying to describe current events as best I can understand them. And if you understand current events within those parameters, then you understand Bill Donahue, you understand the Gretsch trying to steal Festivus, you also understand the urgent need to run a pipeline full of toxic, filthy, death-dealing goo from the northern border of this country to the southern ocean. You understand mountaintop removal. You understand fracking. You understand dumping radioactive garbage in landfills. Which brings me to the note that I received this morning from Scott in Sweden. Hey, Bob or Rebob. First and foremost, I'm glad to hear Bill is doing better. Let's hope for a full recovery, and hope we shall. My apologies for emailing 3 days in a row. No apology necessary, Scott. But the story about the radioactive waste fill in almost level West by God, Virginia, irradiated a raw nerve in me. I imagine the hornies are probably tired of hearing my It's Better Elsewhere stories, but damn it, it is. And no, Scott, I don't think anybody is tired of hearing your It's Better Elsewhere stories, because it is better elsewhere, and yes, it gives us a sense of hope that someday, if not this generation or the next, then maybe a couple of generations down the road, if we merely continue to transmit our wisdom and our understanding, we'll be the people who make this country a decent place to live if it isn't too effing late. Anyway, Scott writes, I did a little data mining and came up with some stats for 2010 here in Sweden. Only 1.4% of all waste. Oh, sit down for that. Yeah. You're going to love it. Only 1.4% of all waste in Sweden goes into a landfill. And only another 1% is categorized as hazardous, chemical and medical, for which special disposal laws apply. Of the remaining 97.6% of waste, 13.8% undergoes biological treatment, various microbes, to generate biogas, and the sludge can be composted and used as fertilizer. 35.4% is recycled, and the remaining 48.4% is incinerated in special power plants with state-of-the-art catalytic converters and so forth, and scrubbers and whatnot, for pollution minimization. It's not a perfect system by any means, but as said, as 97.5% is reused in some fashion. Here's how it's done. The country is thick with recycle stations of various orders of complexity. Almost every apartment building has bins for glass, one for clear, another for colored glass, a bin for metal, another for plastic, another for cardboard or paper packaging, and another for newspapers and other non-glued paper. There's also a small bin for dead batteries. Often there are several bins for each type. Every grocery store parking lot has a set of bins because everyone goes there anyway. The next level up has much bigger drive-up disposal centers where you stop your car level with the top of semi-trailer-sized containers for not only the aforementioned bin types, but here there are additional sorting fractions such as hazardous waste, chemicals, paints, solvents, etc., electronics, old tires, one bin for those still in rims, another for no rims, a bin for pressure-treated anti-rot wood, another for fresh wood for chipping for fuel, another for old furniture for stripping down centrally to recover the metal, another for plastic and styrofoam, one for car batteries, one for fill such as dirt, concrete blocks, stone, and bricks, and a few other bin types as well. You learn about them as needed. Also, and not entering the statistics, almost every home has a large plastic winter-insulated compost bin or two. My neighbor and we share one garbage can, the smallest of the three permitted sizes, and the truck comes by once every other week for it, which is too often as it is seldom as much as half full. Every household is given a square plastic bucket with fitting lid for small electronic crap. When full, you place it by your garbage bin. Just call or email the county, and the weekly e-garbage truck adds you to that week's pickup list. As for rock drilling waste, Sweden has a lot of mining, and most of the tailings are dumped near the mine, unless there's also a town around the mine, and then only according to code. We have to trust the code. I can't find much about radioactivity problems in the rock, but we do have radon problems. A lot of rock spoil gets recycled into roadways and other outdoor concrete structures, but concrete where people live and work and so forth has to be checked for its radon properties first. Finally, here's the bumper music that I want you to add to your library for any and all garbage-related stories. A classic. So we will go with that momentarily, since Scott went to the trouble of defining the realities of garbage in the civilized world.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it with a cough, contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. If those of you who know this song will help me out, we'll get the right feeling. You have to mutter along with me. Garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage, garbage, garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Garbage, 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 garbage. Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac and winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, and there it forms a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, and then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the sky with garbage, garbage, garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage, 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 garbage? Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with the TV in one ear.
While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, beautifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh, garbage. We're filling up our minds with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and there's nothing left to need, and there's nothing left to watch, and there's nothing left to touch, and there's nothing left to walk upon, and nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and nothing left to be but garbage, garbage, garbage.
You know, I listened to that song earlier today, and it caused me to wonder if maybe that song might somehow possibly be the sort of spark of origin for one of our patron saint films here at the Horn, that being Mike Judge's Idiocracy. You might recall that Idiocracy's premise involves the United States buried in its own waste. At which point there's a garbage lanch, and the cryogenic suspended animation containers for the man who will become known as Not Sure are uncovered and opened up. But it's a legitimate question. And see, we still have this manifest destiny myth that infects the United States and makes us think, oh, hell, I didn't just put it somewhere. You know, I would take it out and dump it in the ocean, for Christ's sakes. Big ocean. Oh, hell, take it down to West Virginia. Ain't got nothing but mountains down there. Just throw it up a holler somewhere. It'll catch up. Meanwhile, well, I don't necessarily want to go into the details about this, but the fact of the matter is, Scott knows America pretty well, probably better than he would like to admit. And while some places work on some places work on recycling more than others do, I can tell you, and it's not a joke, we don't here in America's cesspit, West Virginia, Central Appalachistan, we don't work on it at all. I mean. And I'm not. I've been down the local garbage office who comes and collects our solid waste. I've been down there and said, "Listen, please, can't we do something? I mean, it seems stupid throwing away aluminum and throwing away glass. No, just throw it all in the same bag. Hey, we just put it in the landfill." And you know what? If you do take it upon yourself to deal with, say, your recyclable aluminum cans, you've got a drive of probably at least 50 miles, I know, having made that drive, to the scrap metal guy. Glass, forget it about glass. Batteries, tires, you can take them to the landfill, but guess what happens to them at the landfill? They get put in a different part of the landfill. Yeah. Texas Betsy noting down in Austin, we recycle everything. Kids would rather use staples and markers than crayons because we can't recycle paper with glue or crayons. Like I said, other places are trying. But I just happen to live in America's cesspit. It would be unpatriotic in a land that is where coal is our friend, to be talking about such communist business as recycling, because the next thing you know, you start recycling and then somebody's going to come along and suggest that maybe poisoning people living under mountaintop removal sites isn't a good idea, and then, just like Don Blankenstein said, the next thing you know, you're living 9 families to a one-room apartment and riding a bicycle everywhere just like China. Yeah, Jim noting, if only they had a bin for stupid ideas and Fox devotees. Well, that's the nice thing. In Sweden, Jim, they don't need one. Betsy with a query. Why do these things always happen after Dr. Bill finishes for the week? I was in a sixth grade math class today, and the teacher was, once again, telling the kids how to solve a particular math problem. There were a lot of steps. One boy in the third row raised his hand and asked, Miss Blank, wouldn't it be easier to simplify the fraction first so we won't have to divide such hard numbers at the end? What he did say was, just like Ms., namely Betsy, taught me in tutoring. The teacher's response made me cringe.
Well, it might be easier now, but that's not how we're going to do it. We're going to follow the steps in order. Multiply, then simplify.
Later, I asked her whether she allows them to be more flexible with the steps when they get better at fractions.
Oh, no.
Cringe.
Only the kids in advanced can think for themselves about math. This class needs to learn the steps in order.
Bob, you never told me I needed a seatbelt and a tennis ball and duct tape for sixth grade classrooms. On a positive note, she's one of only two teachers I've seen at this school who is this rigid. Woe to the child who gets one for sixth grade and the other for seventh. Oh, so it can be a daily, well, a yearly double where you just stumble, oh, dear. Or as Piglet would say, oh, dear. Jim noting, with regard to Steve's note, gay Catholics, my regards to gay Catholics who devote much but are given little. Marty getting the spirit of things. Bill Donahue wants this country ruled from Rome by the Pope Benedict XVI or Pius the One who was Pope during World War II, but not that Marxist from Argentina. Thank you, Jeremy. The horn sounds clear through TuneIn on my PS3 tonight. Yeah, you can do that. You can listen through your PS3, your gaming center. Yeah, you really can. Dr. John, 1% of waste goes into landfills in Sweden? Dr. John says, my nature is such that I hesitate to look for single causes, but inspired by Scott, I too did a little light research. I came across a report from Gallup in 2009. In a large study, the organization asked representative samples of people in 146 countries a broad question, is religion important in your daily life? The results are interesting. In the U.S., 65% answered yes, 34% no. In other words, the yes response includes only affirmative answers, not ambivalent ones as well. In Sweden, the numbers were 16% yes, 83% no. Don't misunderstand. 60% of Swedes identify as Christian. It's just that most of them don't look to Bronze Age stories as a guide to daily life. What's this got to do with waste? Well, think about the Dominionist idea that once we foul our nest enough, Jesus will return and set everything right. That idea, I guess, has zero traction in Sweden. One of the many benefits, it seems, is a smart approach to trash disposal. And you know, Dr. John, to be fair, we don't even have to go all the way back to the Bronze Age. The Romans, brilliant engineers that they were the best thing they could figure out to do with their waste from their actual plumbing system that ran through the city of Rome was to simply let it vomit forth into the Tiber River, the pollution of which is probably still at the bottom of Seine. I remember being told that the Italians refer to it as the Blonde River of Rome, and being advised, don't go in the water. Not don't go in the water. Everybody goes in the water, apparently, but don't get in the water. And, of course, the original, let me see if I remember this right, the original definition of the place that often gets defined as hell was a place called Sheol, which was the place outside Jerusalem where all the trash was dumped. Sort of like in an open landfill, yeah. And where the bodies of unclaimed, right, nasty business. So, yeah, there is a linkage. I absolutely agree. Irish Dave noting, it says right in the big old book, go forth and multiply your waste.
And it really does. It really does. So there we go with a pretty good idea of a working definition for any given thorn in the side Thursday. A thorn in the side is a thing where you know what is correct, what is right, what is factual, and yet you have manifest evidence of people operating in exactly the opposite direction. Which brings us to one of the Gretsch's colleagues, to wit, 43-year-old, and I'm not joking, somebody let her in and graduated her from a law school, Megyn Kelly. Yeah. You're going to love this.
Okay, so let me move on, because I want to get to this other topic. So in Slate, they have a piece on .com, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed, and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa, you know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay, I wanted to get that straight. But Jedediah, when I read the piece...
Okay, because, see, I don't have it straight yet. I'm having a real problem here. Did I hear what I thought I heard?
Let me move on, because I want to get to this other topic. So in Slate, they have a piece on .com, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed, and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa, you know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe... We should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay,
because all kinds of parents all over the country let their 5-year-olds watch Megyn Kelly. Then again, no. She routinely, as do all the cable news networks, she routinely gets her ass whipped in the ratings by Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network. Really? Nick Jr.? Yeah, they absolutely own the ratings. Yes. SpongeBob beats O'Reilly within an inch of his life every night. Try harder, SpongeBob. You got that, though, right? Santa, she had to reassure the children watching that Santa is white. We're not done. Oh, no.
I'm going to get that straight. But Jedediah, when I read the piece... The author seems...
You're shitting me. They've got a commenter named Jedediah? Does he work with a guy named Zebulon? Jesus, I remember years ago when the Harvard Lampoon's annual parody was of USA Today. And the little blue box in the corner said, Via Big Truck! And for the TV listings that week... There was a listing for the television show Omission Impossible. And the segment description said, once again, Jedediah and Zebulon refuse to answer the demon telephone and thus miss out on another adventure. Really? Just go, you know, I would just go as Jed if I were you. If it was good enough for Mr. Clampett, it's got to be good enough for Fox News.
To have, you know, she's African American, and she seems to have real pain at having grown up with this image of a white Santa, and she speaks about it kind of honestly, saying, I didn't really...
Yeah, just kind of honestly. She doesn't speak about it with true honesty. It's just kind of honest. Can we get, like... Listen, really, could we get a letter out to maybe the folks at Comrex or any of those other people that do the really highfalutin, maybe Telos, the highfalutin broadcast equipment, and get some sort of a privilege chyron so that when Megyn Kelly says something like, she seems like she's being, I mean, she seems like she has real pain out of it. She's being kind of honest that maybe she'll just light up all in white and it'll say, white privilege, white privilege, with one of those general quarters klaxons going off. White privilege, white privilege. Wait, I got effects. White privilege, white privilege, Megyn Kelly, white privilege. Much better. Do, Megyn, please continue. Because you have declared that she seems, you know, sincere.
Understand why that had to be.
Yeah, she wants Santa to be inclusive, and I had the same reaction. Initially, I was thinking, oh, this is more politically correct nonsense. This is hypersensitive.
Okay, I was sexist. Jedediah is apparently a woman. How did I miss that earlier? I mean, there's a guy with a beard sitting there. I mean, I'm sorry.
Activity in our culture, and then you read the piece and you really walk through the steps with her. I think it's a tribute to her writing, and you realize if you were a young kid and you were African American and your Santa Claus was white, it would affect you when you went to school. Maybe you wouldn't feel that you were part of that tradition. Now, she suggests that a penguin should be Santa.
Okay, that's where she goes off the rails.
Well, I think that's kind of interesting, though, to have an animal, which is something that kids love, sort of brings that cartoonish component into it, and I think that makes all kids kind of feel welcome in the process. So I see where she was going with that.
No.
Megyn Kelly does not approve of your analysis. You do not seem genuine.
Oh, it doesn't. No, it doesn't make
so
all kids
feel. Hey, I like
it
penguins. Feels,
it makes all birds feel welcome.
kids
Monica,
like penguins.
You know, but okay. So I've given her name is Aisha Harris. I've given her you know her due on where she was going with it, but just.
But now that she's done that, things are going to get really fun really quick. You're in the hole, Megyn. May I offer you a larger shovel? No, yes, I knew you'd take it.
Just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to change. You know, I mean, Jesus was a white man too, but you...
No, she said it. Just double-checking.
No, it doesn't make
so
all
wrong.
Kids feel.
Hey, I like
it
penguins.
Feels, it makes all birds feel welcome.
kids
Monica,
like penguins.
You know, but okay. So I've given her name is Aisha Harris. I've given her you know her due on where she was going with it. But just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to change. You know, I mean, Jesus was a white man too. But you.
Doc, do you have a minute? Oh, absolutely, Bob. Absolutely. What can I do for you? You want to help with this? What is it that you are having trouble understanding? So last time we were talking about transference, Bob, you seem to have a pretty good handle on it. Not that I'm saying anything about handles. But, I mean, she just said Jesus is a white man, and just because it makes... Well, you see, Bob, that is because it makes her uncomfortable to think of Jesus being something besides white. Her entire world is circumscribed by the privilege with which she is clothed. And, as a consequence, any challenge to that privilege will result in a profound and, in fact, I would suggest to you, medicatable, neurotic situation in which she feels threatened by the fact that her icons are not as white as she is, which is also interesting, Bob, if I may go so far. Dude, Doc, please. If I may please go so far as to note also the fact that in the Washington Post story about her today, I know you don't think I do, but I read things. The story about her in the Washington Post started out with a description about her sitting in her makeup chair at Fox News being airbrushed. Yeah, airbrushed. I scheißt you nicht. Being airbrushed darker than she actually is.
Do we begin to see the degree to which Megyn Kelly's id and ego and superego are in conflict? Yeah, we do, we do.
Well, thank you, Doc. Thank you, really. I appreciate it.
Well, season's greetings to you as well. Fröhliche Weihnacht, whatever. Come on in.
Well, there'll be an extra Schnitzengruber in your stocking, Doc.
No, really.
One of the attack blondes from Fox News has declared that Jesus and Santa Claus are historical figures who were white people. After 10 years, ten years ago, a story like this would have had me screaming to the top of my lungs and running around the room, holding onto the mic boom like Freddie Mercury singing "We Are the Champions." I have matured. There has been growth. I do not do that anymore.
What the f*** is wrong with her?
All right, it almost got out of hand. While I gather my composure, a little more of the clip.
You know, it's like, he was a historical figure. I mean, that's a verifiable fact, as is Santa. I just want the kids watching to know that.
Yes.
But my point is, how do you just revise it, you know, in the middle of the legacy of the story and change Santa from white to black? Yeah.
Might be handy to have Dr. John chime in on this one, please. Can we talk about the ethnicity of the Levant 2,000 years ago? Can we talk about the ethnicity of people living in Anatolia, Asia Minor, 1,600 years ago? Can we talk about the fact in neither instance would anybody consider either of those two people to be white? Now, I understand race, and I have specifically not used the word race, is quicksand. But if we're talking about skin tones, the makeup lady who airbrushes Megyn Kelly every day would have to load the airbrush with a little something maybe closer approaching a shade known to the Nye makeup folks as Navajo brick. It really is a color. To get Megyn Kelly even remotely close to being the same color as the historical Saint Nicholas, or the sort of historical pastiche of human beings who is probably Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. You remember, a couple of months back when we had such a merry, jolly old time with Meet the Fetals? I think we've got another opening here. Oh, dear. Texas Betsy letting me know. The school district subscribes to a video clip and educational movie service, and even it has a history of Santa Claus targeted for 3rd to 8th grades. Oh. But there really was a Saint Nicholas, apparently. He's a lot easier to verify than is Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. And he went around what is modern-day Turkey, giving coins to poor children in commemoration of the relatively new holiday of Christmas. This hurts my brain. But there is an opportunity here. And you can play the game on Twitter. I got it started earlier today. I created a hashtag. And the hashtag is, I have to find it here, I think it's Other Historic White People, and people is PPL. Hashtag Other Historic White People, PPL. I got to thinking about other people who would historically be made white by Megyn Kelly. Right off the bat, based on what I was saying earlier, give us 1,000 years, and good little children will be given gifts by Dr. King and Nelson Mandela. And bad little children will be made to feel guilty by an elf named Gandhi. So naturally, the first other historic white people I thought up were Mandela and Dr. King and Gandhi. We've just gotten a suggestion from Texas Betsy. Hashtag other historic white people. Jackie Robinson. See how easy? Other historic white people. George Washington Carver. Other historic white people. W.E.B. Du Bois. But that's when it gets fun. Other historic white people. Mandingo. Other historic white people. Shaka Zulu. Other historic white people, Kunta Kinte. Other historic white people, Frederick Douglass. Other historic white people, every pharaoh of Egypt. Well, but don't let me ruin it. Y'all play too. God almighty. I guess my problem here is that I don't understand. I mean, I make mistakes on this program, sure. And you guys don't hesitate to let me know when, and I like that. Because being factually correct is a little bit important. But because I'm a big picture person, how many hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, of human beings watched that broadcast and nodded their little heads and said, well, of course Jesus was white, and so is Santa Claus. Utterly oblivious to the fact that Santa Claus was largely invented by Clement Moore, and then visualized by the Coca-Cola Corporation, for heaven's sakes. Oh, that's interesting. Texas Betsy says, I own a wonderful rhyming book about the 12 plagues that I will read aloud or act out, but won't actually show to children. The Israelites are all pink, and the Egyptians are all brown. Oi! Even though they come from the same Nilo-Saharan ethnic genotype. Okay, I conjured Dr. John, and he has kindly obliged. Subject line, White Santa. I'm dreaming of a white Santa. Dr. John says, what we can say about Anatolia 1,600 years ago is that it was a crossroads for people moving between Southwest Asia, Central Asia, East Africa, North Africa, and Europe. Of course, all those names weren't in use yet. Europe, for instance, isn't named as such until after Charlemagne. But I digress. See how easy it is? You start jumping into the historical stew, and the next thing, it's just, that's why it's a stew. It's just one big digression. If it wasn't a digression, it would be a historical consomme. Dr. John says, Anatolia was like a highway of gene flow. Skin tone is an index of a population's evolutionary history and adaptation to climate and diet and solar exposure. What can we say about the historical St. Nicholas's skin tone is it wouldn't have been anything near Megyn Kelly's with or without her foundation. On a deeper level, there's all sorts of evidence that skin tone wasn't something people of the time cared about in the same way we do. No, they really didn't. Not that they didn't see color, which is racist in itself as a statement, and ignorant of the real consequences of being marked as an other. Rather, skin tone was not an index of any other significant characteristic. Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, Nubians, etc. cared a lot more about whether you swore alliance to the king or queen, whether you worshipped the right gods, and whether you treated fairly in your business deals, and so on. That's why, for instance, in Republican Rome, there was a significant Jewish presence in Rome that lived happily there, unpersecuted. And it's also why there was an Isis cult and Mithra and Zoroaster and God knows how many other gods and goddesses and godlings. Because it was understood to be people's personal business. Now, there was the state, there were the state cults, and you couldn't be, you know, walking around screaming, my God is better than Jupiter Optimus Maximus. That would get you into trouble, but that was a matter of crossing the state, not crossing religion. So, no. Megyn Kelly has no more business saying that Jesus and St. Nicholas were historically white than I do saying that I am historically the Tsar of all the Russias. Robert in Australia says, very quickly as I'm off to physio, I recall reading that the current version of Santa is a combination of St. Nicholas and the British character Father Christmas, fat and drunk, then cleaned up by Coca-Cola back in the 20s or 30s. Signed, Robert. Yes, everyone knows the historical Nelson Mandela was white. Yeah. And wasn't Father Christmas sort of a backwards glance at Falstaff? Irish Dave pointing out, Nat Turner, white? And has James Baldwin been, you know, whited out yet? Hashtag white like me. Marty noting historic white people. Desmond Tutu. Ron and Raleigh with a plea. Stop, please. Bob, this much concentrated stupidity has been shown to be a powerful carcinogen and long exposure can cause cancer of the brain. These people are paid how much? A lot. Jan, reporting from the UK, the comments of this woman have been reported in the papers in the UK. She seems to have the IQ of a toilet brush. Oh, toaster. Jan, you get the... You're in the running for tonight's first toaster. Nah, you just get the toaster. She has the IQ of a toilet brush. Not as useful, but maybe as good-looking as one. God, that's beautiful. Toilet brush. Jim with an observation going back to landfills. A thought. Many animal owners, according to vets, allow the remains of beloved pets to be consigned to landfills. I could not bear to think of this malediction. Yeah, landfills are not pleasant places. Sergi, with an update. Garbage in Fort Worth. Down here in Fort Worth, the city government and its Republican mayor and administration are not only big on bicycling and public transit, they're also quite big on recycling. For years, single and multifamily homes have had big blue recycling bins provided for free. Socialism. Yard waste must be placed in special bags with the option of getting a big green bin for such. Our trash bins are brown. To encourage people to recycle, they set up three different sizes of bins people can have. The second biggest and biggest trash bins, the city adds a fee to the monthly water bill for having. As a result, people recycle on a large scale in this city, since throwing everything away costs a lot. Next year, in February, I believe, apartment, condo, etc. complexes are going to be required to have big recycling dumpsters along with the garbage ones. Sergi, Mayor Price is the last of the moderate Republicans. Kyle. It can be done. Hashtag historic white people. Henry Aaron. Thank you, Marty. Dear Lord. I have to live with... I mean, I'm trying to think what time of day it was when I first saw this story. And on the one hand, it's a throwaway. I admit it. It's a throwaway story. It's just another instance of Fox being Fox, Radio Rwanda being Radio Rwanda, and stupid being stupid. But on another, it has a sort of barometric quality. There would not be a market for that kind of stupidity if there was not a market for that kind of stupidity. Irish Dave. Hashtag historic white people. Malcolm X, white by any means necessary. Whoa. Irish Dave also says, as Coot McCain would opine, we are all white now, my friend. We are all white now, my friend. Historic white people. Dr. John says, to paraphrase Jack Nicholson's epic Joker in the Batman movie regarding Fox, this network needs an anima. Yes, it do. But I don't know where we're going to let it... The problem with enemas are gravity involved. I mean, it's one thing to give Fox one, but it's another... Because, see, you could argue, Dr. John, that they're getting one daily and they're spewing it all back at us. I know. Sorry. That was... kind of dinner time, isn't it? Sorry, my bad. Texas Betsy follows up. Also in sixth grade, but across the hall, Isis was the lady god who lived at the same time and married her brother. No goddesses in this crowd. Lady god. We have small and large blue bins, Texas Betsy notes. And trash costs double if you fill more than one per two-week period. But you can have six recycle bins. Most of the stuff we throw away is recyclable. To one degree or another. And you really want to work out some frustration? Those little lever-action can crushers are an absolute delight. And they make your pop cans or beer cans or whatever into little discs, kind of like hockey pucks. And you can stand there, for instance, maybe you've just heard Megyn Kelly declare that Jesus and Santa Claus were historic white people, and you can stand there with your aluminum can crusher. Stupid! Idiotic! Moron! And pretty soon you're all mentally healthy again. Further reminding me that I do live in America's cesspit. I mean, Jesus, when Fort Worth is recycling. Help me. Dr. John notes, my town, Binghamton, New York, has a really sensible approach to recycling. It's a pay-as-you-throw system. The city only picks up special trash bags. They cost about $1.25 each, so it's a use tax for waste pickup rather than a tax linked to property value. Everything that's set aside for recycling, also picked up and sorted out by the city, is picked up for free. So the more you recycle, the less you pay for trash pickup. All of this would be denounced by the friends of coal as not creeping, but galloping communism. Ron in Raleigh asks, how about Ron Dellums, Cornell West, and Adam Clayton Powell? Hashtag historic white people. See, that would be a beautiful thing, is if we could mount a sort of little mini-insurgency so that every person of color who appears on television with Megyn Kelly could start out and say, hi, Megyn, I'm fill-in-the-blank, historic white person. Irish Dave reminding us all that it's a well-known true fact that Jesus dragged a Festivus pole up the Calvary Hill as a feat of strength, but mystery surrounds his airing of grievances. Hitler, white man or not? Tough one. Although I will note that on my Facebook page today, our good friend and the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, did quip in regard to Megyn Kelly, to Aryan is human. And there's more. Oh, Lord. There's so much more. Hours of it, as a matter of fact. But we'll take a break right now. Thank you very much again to Karen, who got us started this evening. $125 to go with fundraising the evening. Thank you very much. Hopefully we can keep on track. We'll take a break. Brad and Desi are around, this being Thursday and everything. Brad and Desi are around with the Green News Report. So we've got that as well. You know the number, 304-658-3333 on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Jump right in. The conversation is fine.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know. Those treetops listen, and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow. But then I am dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write.
May your days be merry and bright. It's Thursday, December 12, 2013.
When you think about abrupt changes and threshold effects, the road suddenly drops out from under you.
Scientists warn of abrupt climate change.
The way you should really do it is via a carbon price. It rises and then let the marketplace make the decisions.
Prominent scientists call for a carbon tax, while Big Oil is secretly planning for a carbon tax. The FDA moves to ban antibiotics from animal feed. Plus, after claiming the North Pole is their own, Canada now promises to protect Santa from the Russians. No, really.
All of those fronts in the war on Christmas straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Joe Barton of Texas. He's the House's leading expert on energy. And by expert, I always mean the guy who gets the most cash from the oil industry.
Hey, an expert is an expert. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, who knew Canada would be going to war on Christmas or to defend Santa or something, but what do you have for us today?
We'll get to that in a moment. But first, the Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday finally acted to fight the rise of antibiotic-resistant superbugs, issuing a new but voluntary guideline to reduce the use of some types of antibiotics in farm animals. 80% of all antibiotics in the U.S. are given to farm animals to make them grow faster in crowded, filthy factory farm conditions.
How do we get antibiotic-resistant superbugs in the first place?
By putting so much of our antibiotic supply into our food supply.
And the viruses evolve to become resistant to those antibiotics?
Right.
So I have to believe in evolution to take your story seriously?
Only if you care about your health.
Okay, well, move on.
Meanwhile, at the annual meeting of the American Geophysical Union, retired NASA scientist Dr. James Hansen says there is still time to act to combat dangerous climate change, and the best way to minimize these irreversible impacts of climate change is to tax carbon emissions.
The problem is really carbon emissions. The way you should really do it is via a carbon price. It rises, and then let the marketplace make the decisions.
The devil is in the details, though. Hansen says a carbon tax should be structured so that 100% of the revenue goes directly to the public, with zero going to the government. He also calls on the U.S. to invest more in new nuclear technology because time is running out.
Renewables have to be part of the solution, but we're running out of time. And this is a hard problem to deal with. We're already beginning to have some noticeable effects, and there's more in the pipeline.
So the problem is so bad that prominent climate scientists like James Hansen are saying that what's going to happen with climate change is worse than the danger of using more nuclear energy.
That's basically it. Now, interestingly, Big Oil and their Republican friends in Congress have ferociously fought any and all market-based mechanisms to reduce their carbon pollution. But the New York Times reports that the Big Five oil companies are already quietly planning for a carbon tax. An analysis of their corporate strategy documents shows they've been planning for the U.S. to implement a carbon tax within the next few years.
Good to know that the big oil companies realize that paying for their pollution is at least in the pipeline, so to speak.
Also, an expert panel of scientists at the National Academy of Sciences is calling for an early warning system to alert us to abrupt changes in the climate, warning we are not doing enough to monitor potentially catastrophic abrupt changes. In a press conference last week, UC Berkeley's Anthony Barnosky explained.
We watch other parts of the system very well, and we do not watch our environment nearly with the same amount of care and zeal.
How abrupt are these changes that he's talking about? About overnight, over a year, 10 years? What's he talking about?
Well, they say that some abrupt changes are already occurring, like the record fast melting of sea ice in the Arctic. They warn one big possible change: sea levels could rise very quickly by as much as 25 feet over just a few decades if the West Antarctic ice sheet were to disintegrate. But they say because we're doing very little monitoring of these areas, we won't know in advance. Finally, Russia is not happy with Canada's plans to vastly expand its territory into the Arctic to claim the North Pole and the region's rich oil and gas resources. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered the formation of a new military unit in the Arctic to remain on constant combat alert. So in response, a Canadian member of parliament has vowed that Canada will protect Santa Claus from the Russian military.
Did he really say that?
He really said that.
So they really are going to war over the North Pole, Canada versus Russia. Hey, where's U.S. in this? We need to be in every war.
I hope you're wrong about that.
Apparently, we don't love Santa. Fox News is right. It's our war on Christmas. For much more on that and the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves. And a quick program note for those who subscribe via iTunes. After the first of the year, we will be moving to a new server. So stop by bradblog.com after the first of the year to find out where you can update your free iTunes subscription. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, December the 12th, 2013. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I was just checking in on the chat room, talking a little bit with our buddy Jug of Punch, we were talking about Mr. Stress. So, nothing really to report. I probably should have mentioned before the program that I did check in on him earlier today, but he was still sleeping. And you know what? That is not necessarily a bad sign. A, getting any rest in a hospital is difficult. B, after a traumatic event like this, rest is a very, very good thing. So we'll just keep the good vibes and good thoughts going toward Mr. Stress. 304-658-3333 is the number, of course, and you can also reach the program via Skype at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Horn, Bob Kincaid, Horn. If you've never reached out via Skype, you can always chime right in by sending me a contact request. I will approve it lickety-split unless it's a picture of a scantily clad woman saying, "I am wanting to know you better, you beautiful." Those I don't respond to. Because I just generally don't like being lied to. But yeah. Ha! To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, you'll never get one like that from me.
And it's one of those things for which I'm grateful, Jim.
Indeed, you should be. Oh my God.
You don't do Facebook much or anything, do you, Jim?
Oh, I get these Facebook things for people I don't even know.
Okay, so you know of which I speak.
Yeah, and I never really, or my cousin down in Camden had suggested that I sign up for it. And then I thought, no, I don't want to. But apparently I did, and I'm getting stuff from people that you would not believe.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And I remember when MySpace was big. And Peter Godbold signed up for it, and he would say things to me like, "Bob, why am I constant? I've got gay all over my page. Why am I getting these contact requests from these blondie-headed hoes?" Because he was constantly beset by blondes.
Well, I mean, some of the stuff they put up there is, you know, basically communication between them and their friends. But somehow I got added in, and I've never really gone to this thing about, I think we have to put add a friend and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's just the way things are today in the social media. But, you know, pursuant to what they were saying about Santa Claus and the North Pole, like I told you before, I thought it was the Martians who were going to attack Santa Claus, not the Russians.
Well, see, it's another case of them watching a perfectly innocent movie and thinking it's a training film, Jim.
So the Russian president is going to sign a mountain division to, or an Arctic, or it's going to be like an ice station zebra type thing up there at the North Pole.
It's kind of shaping up that way. The Chinese want it, the Canadians want it, and the Russians want it.
Well, I guess it will come to those who put the most up there to get it or whatever, but my God in heaven, is there no place on the planet that is just being left alone?
No. No, not if there's not if there's anything that capitalism can monetize underneath it. That's the whole purpose of capitalism, is to consume the entire planet until it's left as nothing but a quaking husk of its former self with no people on it.
Well, unfortunately, I think the greatest enemy of Santa Claus and the North Pole, and I think it's basically what you played last night, is the fact that he's not going to have any more ice or anything like that because it's all going to melt.
Yeah, getting those elves to work with water wings on is kind of tough, Jim.
Honestly and truly, I just never really can believe some of the stuff I hear and some of the stuff I see. It's just incredible. I see where the Congress is, or the House of Representatives is passing the budget bill.
Yeah, I did. I got a breaking news notification about that a little bit ago.
And I know that Waxman and another Democratic representative from Texas, a very effective black representative, they were both begging for the extension of unemployment benefits after December 28th.
Yeah, that's not in the bill, is it?
No, sir, it's not.
It passed 332-94. Anyone care to bet, Jim, on what percentage of that 94 are teabaggers?
100.
I mean, I was thinking maybe there might be a couple of progressives in there voting against it, maybe because it doesn't have any unemployment comp extension in it or something like that. But
no, it's probably 100. I mean, you know, they all watch that together and stuff like that. You know, these people who are on these extended unemployment benefits or unemployment benefits in question, I mean, they have paid into that while they worked, and they're actually seeking work. And yet, they're going to cut them off in the bleak of winter with not one single centime, not a sou, not a dime, not a kopeck. And that's not good. What does that tell you?
Well, one of the things that it tells me is that this nation is in big, 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 big trouble, because this bill itself is not a solution.
Oh no!
Once again, the poorest and most vulnerable in our society take it on the chin. For instance, all this is an extension. There's no solution to the hunger problem, as you have alluded to. It's simply not there. And of course, the Senate Democrats are apparently not happy at all. If I'm to understand the reporting from the New York Times, as they explain it, it says all the House could pass on Thursday was a simple extension of the current law, which Senate Democrats oppose because they want an entire new bill.
Mm-hmm.
So no.
And they have what? How many days to do it? When do they go on Christmas recess?
Tomorrow.
I think so. I mean, hell, we just got away from Thanksgiving, where they had 2 weeks, and, you know, they just simply can't, or they simply don't want to, and they're putting stuff out there that they know no one will pass and stuff like that, and, you know, it's just more gridlock, deadlock, and a lot of people being hurt, which don't need to be hurt.
Well, among some of the other details, Jim, This legislation apparently, allegedly, extends current Medicare payment rates for 3 months, and it supposedly provides breathing space for lawmakers to come up with a real solution, which I don't think that you, I, or anyone in the Horn family commune who has not been huffing laughing gas thinks is going to happen. Among other things, I had one of those right-wing press releases, which
pollute my inbox just before airtime. Let me see if I can find it here, because it was interesting insofar as it was a sort of teabagger take on things. Oh, darn it, where'd it go? Anyway, it was something about America being sold short on cutting spending. Just charming business.
I know. And as far as the farm bill is concerned, I understand that's going to probably pass, right?
No, there's no agreement. I mean, they already passed a piece of crap in the House, and the Senate passed $5 billion worth of cuts to hungry people.
Yeah.
But it's not enough. Not enough for the right-wingers and the teabaggers. Oh, hell no.
That is indeed quite regrettable, that's for sure. And that term regrettable is about the strongest thing I can muster up at the same time without being really ugly. But nonetheless, you know, I don't understand that type of mentality. I really don't. I mean, these people up there are interested in, you know, posturing, making all kinds of statements about plans that really will not work.
Well, I mean, okay, just to give you an idea on how far apart people are, here is the press release language from Americans for Prosperity, which is, of course, one of the lead AstroTurf teabag gangs.
Oh, yeah.
Today's budget vote breaks a promise made to the American people and replaces bipartisan spending limits set by the BCA with gimmicks and more empty promises about future responsibility. It's disappointing to see self-described conservative Republicans vote for more of the same wasteful government spending that's already put us $17 trillion in debt. The votes tonight are a clear measure of where each representative actually stands on fiscal responsibility.
And they should suffix that remark by referencing how easy it is to strain at a gnat and swallow a camel.
Yeah. Gag on a mountain, or gag on a gnat and swallow a mountain. That's them.
Oh, Lord have mercy. You know, I was watching C-SPAN and you know, seeing who was getting up in posture for 1 minute or that minute or this minute or that minute or that minute. You know, I really don't understand how in the world, under such rules, these people can get anything done. I mean, you have one person who goes up there and speaks, and when he gets toward 59 seconds or 58 seconds, he's recalled, I guess, by Robert's Rules of Order or whatever. But, I mean, you know, it's the whole thing is they concentrate more on the format of their meetings than they do on the content. And the real...
But that's what happens in sort of post-classic civilizations. Form becomes more important than function.
Function, yeah, absolutely, you're right.
I mean, look at the Baroque period. Look at my hang-ups with or my fascinations with Mesoamerica. Look at post-classic Maya civilization.
Uh huh.
Look at Imperial Rome as opposed to Republican Rome. You know, Republican Rome was largely a city built of wood. That's why it burned so easily.
Right.
And it gets transformed into a city of stone. But at the same time, Rome as a capital was on its way out. And pretty soon you wind up with the emperors living at Milan, at Trier, another town in Serbia.
They did transfer, that's for sure. I mean, Augusta said, I founded a city of brick and left a city of marble. I guess it was okay for a couple hundred years after he left the Palatine, but nonetheless, it certainly began to deteriorate. And, once something like that expands to a certain point, it can only expand so far, and then it begins to, you know, to contract because of other elements, human elements, who don't want it to. The people who are trying to preserve that expansion They simply can't do it. I mean, it may last for a little while, but I mean,
no, they are a tiny contingent of people trying to hold the gates against a horde of barbarians.
Yeah, it didn't take long either, from, you know, the first century to the fifth century, when, you know, Rome was literally sacked and destroyed, or pretty much knocked out, and they had to go to Constantinople. But, I mean, it's the course of any empire that will be established. I mean, empires grow, and then I guess the people who were responsible for their expansion pass away, and then, of course, the ones who follow them in the middle may bask in its glory, and then on the third or tertiary step, that's when it becomes, you know, very fragile and begins to fall apart.
You know, but what's, I mean, we can, I guess you can kind of cut the ancient world some slack. I don't know if it's going to make sense or not. But we in the modern era, especially we in the United States, have a really good, high-functioning understanding of the evolution and devolution of empire, do we not, Jim?
I would hope so, but you know how people learn from history, Bob.
You mean not?
They don't. They simply don't. They don't recognize the lessons of history. They don't recognize, you know, the things that have happened before, and they don't use the mistakes of the past as a format in which maybe problems of the future can be avoided, if not corrected. They just don't seem to do that. It seems to be, like I say, history is not linear. It's cyclical, and it just goes right around. And history is a great teacher, but unfortunately, people as a whole are extremely, very poor students.
Well, it seems to me, Jim, that the people who have chosen to take the United States down the path of empire did so not for the good of the United States, but for their own aggrandizement. In some circles, it would be referred to as self-dealing.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you've got big business and corporations and things like that who, of course, will benefit by the expansion of this country into any place that will accept it and will establish support for regimes that are highly unpopular. And, of course, eventually, these regimes are not going to last that long. And the people there are just not going to put up with being, you know, taken advantage of to the point where their lifestyle is so low, and the imperialists, the people who come into that age, simply are not going to sustain it. I mean, you know, as Lenin once said, imperialism is the highest state of capitalism in the state and revolution. I believe he said that. And I think we can follow that particular line of reasoning.
I don't, but I don't know if he was correct. I think it is the entropic form.
Well, and you know,
you know what I mean by that. It is that form of capitalism where it begins to collapse upon itself.
Yeah, it does, exactly. It does indeed. It will literally. It begins to, all of the things that kept it, alive and in form, the supports begin to dissolve. And the major supports for that kind of particular government or philosophy of government are people who are beset upon and taken advantage of, and the people who are literally raped economically, socially, physically, every other way. That's just my opinion there. It may be full of holes, and I'm sure somebody's out there who'd be willing to shoot full of holes, and I'd be glad if they did. But, you know, that's the thing that I just sort of have believed a long time. And, of course, you have, coupled with that, military adventurism and things of that nature, which are totally inimical to any type of sound financial and humane reasoning. They really are. I mean, military adventurism, like we've seen in Iraq, like we've seen in Afghanistan, like we've seen in so many other areas of the world. How long can that be sustained, really?
And I guess we're in the middle of an object lesson on don't know. We'll find out.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. I think one of the worst things I've ever seen on television pursuant to the Iraq War was George W. Bush out there in a pair of jogging shorts, jogging with a man who had two artificial legs. And I thought to myself, who in God's name put this thing on the TV and even advised him to do it? It was the worst of all tastes of any kind.
Well, put that, but then again, that, I agree, Jim, but put that up there, set that on the shelf right next to the picture of George Bush mocking the people who had died in Iraq in that comedy video for the White House treehouse dinner, where he said, where he was looking under the coffee table and the couch saying, hey, nope, no weapons of mass destruction here.
Oh, yeah, he was looking right under the desk, too. I mean, you know, almost like, you know, it was the same desk I think that John used to peer out from under for the cameras for his father, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I just wish there was somebody when his big butt was sticking up above when he was looking for that desk would have had the guts to have kicked him right in the ass and underneath that desk and out the damn window.
Yeah, just put a slip and slide right in front of him. And bye, George.
Exactly.
You know, you bring up George Bush, though, and I know you don't go in for sport, but this is not a sports story. You'll get a kick out of this. And this is in that same vein of, George, why don't you just keep your effing mouth shut? You know, a couple of weeks ago, in one of the most heated rivalries in sport, on a last-second miracle play, Auburn ran a missed field goal by Alabama back 108 yards to get the win. Well, Auburn is now playing for the national championship. They're having a Cinderella season by any measure.
Yes, they are.
So the kicker who kicked that short field goal is a kid named Cade Foster, who had missed two other field goals. He'd had one blocked, he'd had one missed. He had a really rotten day. And to be fair, the Tide really didn't need a field goal kicker all year long. But that might be part of it. So apparently the kid got death threats and stuff like that after he missed the field goals, which is a discussion for another time that's just sickening. But lo and behold, he goes out to the mailbox and gets his mail one day, and there's a letter in it from George W. Bush, Jim. I kid you not.
And what did he write?
Well, see, George felt a sense of kinship with Cade Foster because Cade Foster was number 43.
Oh my God!
you want to get a refill before we do this, Jim?
No, that's okay. I mean, you know, I've got one right here in front of me. I mean, is he into numerology now or something like that?
Well, it says, and he hand wrote it in, I can't tell if it's black crayon or Sharpie, December 3rd, 2013. Dear Cade, paren number 43, paren comma. Life has its setbacks. I know! Exclamation point. However, you will be a stronger human with time. I wish you all the best. Sincerely, another 43, George Bush.
Well, I wonder if George sent along one of his drawings. He's apparently become quite an artiste right now.
Yeah, I saw. Oh my God! Okay, again from the
tablet and all the stuff.
Oh no, from the I kid you not department, Jim. Isaac tweeted these photos out to me last night and to the world. I saw a photo from Air Force One, and it's a real furniture kicker of George W. Bush showing his art to Hillary Clinton.
I saw that. And I can just imagine what Mrs. Clinton was thinking. I can just imagine what was going on in her mind. And, you know, what her reply must have been. Oh, that's nice, George.
Why, that's lovely, Georgie. I will put it on my refrigerator.
I certainly will, and thank you so much. And I will also, if I can, buy a toilet in which I can put a bottom of it right in the base of the toilet every time I sit down on it. That's exactly...
Well, you're familiar with the Kitty Kelly book on the bushes, right?
Got it right here. I'm looking at it.
You know that passage in there where Barbara gets all pissed off because Nancy didn't appreciate their Christmas gift?
Oh, yeah, and returned it, or gave it to somebody else. It, what, was it a white wreath or something?
No, ceramic cowboy boots or something.
Well, there was a white wreath that she didn't like either. She, you know, the Reagans had a whole closet of gifts in which, you know, they would re-gift to other people. And, of course, Nancy would go to this closet. God, it must have been bigger than Joan Crawford's closet.
Or Fibber McGee's.
God almighty. I mean, it must have been, like I say, bigger than Joan Crawford's wardrobe closet in that movie. But nonetheless, she would take all these gifts, coffee makers and stuff like that, no matter what they were, and she would also re-gift them to other people and say, you know, I guess they'll be satisfied with it, and if they aren't, I don't give a damn if they are. And I'll tell you something funny now that we're approaching the holidays, and that's what Kitty Kelly describes as a Reagan Christmas, in which the Reagans were invited over to the Wicks house, and that he, I think, was the USIA director, and this guy named Wick was nothing more than a turd who ran all these low-rate nursing homes in which people were left to lie there in their own urine and feces and stuff like
bed that. Bed sores and misery and anguish and agony.
Exactly. And
for a buck, remember, for a profit.
And then the staff there who had to accompany the Reagans to this dinner, and of course they were having tenderloin, shrimp, and all this kind of stuff, the Reagans were, and the staff was offered nothing. And they actually, well, the Secret Service men had to send out for Burger King so that these people who had been forced to work after hours, away from their families, didn't even get a taste of what was left at the table. And it was put up. It was not shared with them. They had to send somebody out, or a Secret Service agent had to go to Burger King so that they had something to eat.
Jesus.
And that's exactly, you know, what I feel when all these people get on about the Reagans and stuff like that, and you know, Nancy Reagan, and oh, her Christmas parties were just incredible. I mean, her staff was so, oh Lord have mercy. As a matter of fact, the Reagans were staying in a hotel, and the hotel management had put up Waterford crystal bowl, beautiful thing, and filled with jelly beans. And Nancy didn't have a gift, so what'd she do? She took the hotel Christmas bowl and gave it to somebody. And the bowl was worth, back in 1981.
Jesus, that's something straight out of a Fields movie, you know?
It sure is. I mean, the bowl was, I think, valued back in 1981 or whatever, at over to $150. I mean, anybody up there who has access to that book can look it up, but I think that's the price. But nonetheless, I mean, talk about people who just didn't give a damn about anybody else except themselves, and yet tried to portray themselves as such wonderful, caring people, and the city on the hill, and this
morning. Don't forget Morning in America, Morning in America on the City on the Hill.
Yeah,
that's morning. Shining.
Yeah, Morning in America in Alaska on December 21st. But, you know, basically, I mean, it's just incredible how selfish some of these people are, and just what, you know, fakes they are. And I think that what was said earlier about giving Fox News an enema, damn good. I appreciate that remark, except the trouble is they just turn right around and pass it on to us or anybody else, and
yeah,
people believe it, you know?
Yeah, if you're going to do that, you're going to need a big cork. Well, the reason I thought about this ESPN story, about this letter to the Alabama Kicker, and by the way, Cade Foster said, I'm sure going to frame that and save that and hang that on my wall.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, you mentioned the photo op of George Bush out there running with a man who didn't have two legs because of what George Bush did, lying us into an unnecessary war. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing passed my mind, Jim, when I read this story about George Bush saying, life has its setbacks, I know. I wonder if any of the people who whose loved ones were left floating in the fetid filth of the breached levees of Katrina got a letter from George saying, life has its setbacks, I know. I wonder if anybody else who lost a limb or limbs or loved ones got a letter from George Bush saying, life has its setbacks, I know. It's that I know part, Jim, that just really makes me want to eat and run rabbits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think basically what he would just ought to say to people, shit happens. That would be more appropriate and more appropriate.
I mean, this man has been clothed in privilege his entire miserable, rotten life.
Yeah, he sure has.
And he has never known a setback at all. I mean, unless he was running his own oil company into the ground.
Or maybe when he plowed his car into the house drunk.
Or maybe, you know, maybe when...
he may have gotten set back from a little, you know, Newton's law, you know?
Right. The guy wasn't even prosecuted for being AWOL from the National Guard when other people were dying in his place in Vietnam.
That's what really pissed me off. That is the thing that really got me going. And how could this guy do what he did? And, oh, Lord. Bob, I would tell you this, and I'll get off here. I would not trade, and I've said this before, I would not trade places with him as far as his soul is concerned for all the tea in Mexico. If there is an accountability and an answering for what you've done, for why you did it, and when you did it, and how you did it, brother, I would not want to be in his place, and I thank God I'm not. I mean, you know, at least as far as going to meet my maker is concerned, I have a lot of things to account for, but thank God I don't have to account for that. And not to account for the pain and misery and the horror that has been inflicted upon countries that were just destroyed unnecessarily, and also the people who were fighting those battles for him when he was not within a shot being fired of him. You know, if George Bush, honestly and truly, or Dick Cheney, I may as well bring in Count Dicula, about the only shot that's ever been fired in front of, well, Count Dicula was when he almost killed somebody in a hunting accident. And as far as George Bush is concerned, if you probably would like to see a gun-shy dog, he probably would be one of them.
Well, I think you're right. And, well, and you know, it's just, there are a million... 10 years ago, Jim, in the country of Iraq, there were a million human beings, men, women, and children.
Right.
Not members of any military,
no,
members of any insurgency, not members of any terrorist group. There were a million human beings who were alive and might reasonably be expected to still be alive, but for the existence of George W. Bush and Count Dicula and Rumsfeld and Cheney and the Douglas Fife and that guy who puts his comb in his mouth and kind of Sleazy Rice and Colin Powell. But for them, they would still be busy being human beings.
You know, it's a funny thing. How many pints are there per human being?
What, five?
Yeah. And I will never forget in that film, Nicholas and Alexandra, when, of course, Lazar had fallen, and they were being trucked away by train to Siberia, and one of the commissars came to Nicholas, and he said, you know, 15 million people died. And he said, you didn't even count them because you had somebody to count them for you. 15 billion people at 5 quarts a man or woman. He said, it's an ocean of blood, literally. And the same thing that was portrayed in that film, Nicholson and Alexandra, was based, could be basically applied to, I think, George Bush. 10 million? That's a lot of blood. Five?
Well, now, the one thing that Bushes and Cheneys and so forth, Jim, do understand is things that are measured in barrels. And by my rough calculation here, and I'm not doing it on the fly because we know it's unreliable, they were responsible for the shedding of 18,181 barrels of blood.
Oh, my God.
You know, like barrels of oil, BBLs.
I know. They even measure it in barrels now, not pints.
Well, no, I converted it to barrels. I took the 5 million pints and turned that into gallons, and then divided that by 55 and got 18,000 barrels of blood.
Well,
because Republicans understand things measured in barrels, because they care more about oil than they do anything else on the damn planet.
Yeah, I guess that is a very good metric. It actually is, because they don't appreciate pints. I guess it would have to be barrels for them. But it's a sad situation, and it's an even sadder situation, as I said earlier in our conversation, you know, as far as, you know, those people trying to deny those individuals a little unemployment which they've earned, and that's just not right. And, you know, it's, I don't know. And, you know, I can't see any solution to it. I mean, you know, I don't like to sit here and think about bad things or what's that, you know, because I've got enough bad things going on in my own personal life. But nonetheless, I guess when I see some of this stuff, mine become almost insignificant. But
perspective.
I can tell you this. I never supported that type of activity. I never supported that type of adventurism. I never supported that type of warlike policy, because I knew that the results of it would be the people, the non-combatants, and what is the term they use now? So I think they've got another one.
Collateral damage?
Collateral damage and stuff like that, you know. It was, you know, but it means as much to them as what one directive went out during Vietnam when they changed from MACV in Saigon to, instead of to destroy, to sweep and clear. You know, it's just, you know, as George said to Martha, aren't they such a devil with language?
Yes, they are. And, of course, then there were the nefarious free fire zones.
Oh, boy. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I don't just sit here looking for things to make you want to scream, Jim. But you know, you mentioned. Well, I've got a clip here. I'm not going to play it. But I've got a clip here from a guy who is a talk radio guy. Of the right wing variety. He is, his name is Steve Deace, D-E-A-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
And he is one of these really corpulent, anti-abortion types.
Oh, boy.
You know, you get a look at this guy, and you really don't think he's got anything to worry about getting anybody pregnant ever.
You know,
and that's very tacky on my part, and I understand it. You know, this guy's a shitheel, and he deserves whatever we hand him. So here's what he says. He says that it's wrong to permit abortions in the case of rape or incest. And by way of explaining himself, he says, why not come up with an exception
for no abortions in except for cases of Muslim babies.
You got to be kidding me.
He says there's only 0.7% of the population of the United States is Muslim. There are more children conceived in rape or incest in America, about 1%, than the total population of Muslims in America. So why not?
Oh, my God. That doesn't surprise me. You know, I think I sent you an email long ago. If men could get pregnant, abortion would become a sacrament.
Oh, yes. Without a doubt.
And I don't mean that in any way to be sexist or whatever, but it's the damn truth, in my opinion. That's just the way I feel. And all these people who are chanting on about this, that, and the other, we have more important things facing this country than when so-called life begins. But that's okay. You know, they love that. But the trouble is, once the baby is born,
you're on your own.
You're on your own. And on that note, I'm going to leave you because I know you got people that want to talk to you, I'm sure. But one final thing. I hope that Mr. Stress is going to do better, and I'm glad he's at least able to sleep. Because, Bob, I'll tell you one thing. I was in a hospital two years ago, I think. And honestly and truly, the noise at, like, midnight was so loud. I mean, we're talking about things clunking and people screaming. And then...
Yeah, you've been in quieter honky-tonks.
Exactly. And then doctors coming in to deal with patients at 2 o'clock in the morning, not for any code blue type of thing.
Just because that's when it's best for him to make his rounds.
You got it. At 2 o'clock in the fucking morning. I don't believe that. And, you know, I called the security people.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. And I said, what is this asshole doing in here? And it was some guy.
Sir, that's your doctor.
And I just said, what is this asshole doing in here? I said, and then this nurse, no uniform, nothing like that. I mean, I can remember in hospitals when they had signs with the nurse saying, shh, quiet. I mean, it sounded like they were having roller derby out there. I mean, not only roller derby.
I'm not laughing at, I'm laughing with. You know
but,
that.
Yeah, I know. But red hot ramble, whatever they want to call it. My God in heaven, all they needed was a stripper out there carrying on and, you know, they playing that song. But nonetheless, it's just incredible. And this woman came in to me. She said, well, over the past 20 years, you know, things have changed. And that's just the way the health care system is. And I looked at her and I said, fuck you.
God bless you, Jim. If there's some sort of a deity out there, he has put you on this planet to deal out justice to people who richly deserve it.
Well, Bob, I don't tolerate a lot of things. I don't tolerate waste. I don't tolerate waste of any kind, whether it's human material or whether it's any kind of material. And I don't tolerate stupidity. And I don't tolerate these gimp answers that are given just to say, well, this is supposed to make you realize where we're going.
Well, you remind me of the fact that...
I told her, badass, where to get it. I said, I know where you're going, sweetheart, out the fucking door, because I picked up the phone and called security. And, you know, all of a sudden things quieted down a little bit. And then in comes this idiot who couldn't even speak English as a doctor to this guy who was, I don't know, alcoholic, and he was in there because of that, this, that, and the other. But nonetheless, he should have been somewhere else. And that's when I got into it with him.
Well, you remind me of a couple of months ago when I went down to my local clinic for to have my cheap blood work Tuesday results gone over.
Yeah, how's that going, Bob?
Oh, you know, same numbers, different day. Everything's good except my triglycerides and cholesterol. Blood sugar's good. Bun and creatinine are awesome. Amylase and lipase. Everything's righteous, except my triglycerides and my cholesterol. But anyway, it was during that. They were disgusted because she said, "I'm using your paper file, but that Obamacare is making us put everything on those
computers. You know he's a Muslim, don't you? That was day, Jim.
Oh, yeah, I know. And there was one doctor I heard of from California.
That was the day that I referred to her referred to her Bible as a myth. And, well, she didn't understand the meaning of myth. And she literally moved herself backwards from me because she was pretty sure I was going to get struck by lightning.
Probably. And one other thing I'll add. I understand from a friend of mine in San Francisco, her doctor told me that because of the Affordable Health Care Act, that they were having to add $40,000 worth of software to their computers.
It's possible.
Pay for it themselves with no help from the government. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And she said, no. She said, that's what my doctor told me. San Francisco, a very good medical community there.
Yeah, but see, there's the rub, Jim. That's what my doctor told me. There's a story coming out of Eastern Kentucky, in fact, one of our good friends of long standing lives there, out of Somerset, Kentucky, about a 91 or 89 year old physician who has announced the closure of his practice because that Muslim communist Kenyan socialist with a deep seated hatred of white people, anti-colonialist, is making them all put computers in their offices. And he said, I don't know anything about computers, so I quit.
Well, I think he'd best be served and serve his community well by being retired and thinking about other times and other places.
Indeed. Jim, it's been a good conversation.
You take care, and take care. Bye.
Thanks. Bye now. And I look at things like that with a bit of a jaundiced eye. Unless I see some sort of formal proof, it sounds like propaganda. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hi, it's Darlene.
Oh, hi, Darlene. It's lovely to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to talk with you. I'm sorry, I can't top Jim there. I was laughing listening to him, and he's talking about his medical experiences. What you were just talking about, I can kind of segue into it, because I need to vent a little bit about the Connecticut exchange for the Affordable Care Act.
Okay.
And just to kind of talk about what I'm seeing here in Connecticut, and I don't know if my experiences can help anybody else, but we have a private... And by no means, it doesn't sound like the website that we have here for the exchange is as bad as what you're experiencing there.
Well, bear in mind, Darlene, I'm dealing with the federal government exchange.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay. So you're not working from the state, you're dealing with the federal?
No, we took several million dollars to set our own exchange up, spent the money, and then told the feds that we decided we'd let them do it.
Oh, lovely.
Amazing how you can do that and there are no indictments involved.
Exactly, yeah. We have a private company that set up the exchange website here in Connecticut and is supposed to help Connecticut taxpayers who are footing that bill, help us navigate through the website and also help us select the plan that's best for us, you know, individually. And this company is called Maximus Inc. And we have no idea, the taxpayer has no idea how much we've paid this company to do the job, because the Connecticut state, the government, I don't know if it's strictly the Malloy administration's Democrat, and the Connecticut legislature are complicit in keeping that information as proprietary. So we don't know how much we're footing, you know, how much it's costing the taxpayer to pay this company to do this. There's estimates being thrown out that it's about $15 million, but we don't know, because I guess for contractual reasons or for competitive bidding processes, they don't want anyone to know what they're asking for, which is just a load of crap, because Vermont apparently released all of that information to its residents. So Vermonters know how much they paid the private company, which I guess I'm seeing things like headlines that that private company has not done a very good job running the state exchange there. And I thought I caught the name was Digital Benefit Advisors. I guess they're the ones running the Vermont exchange. So I've been going through the Connecticut exchange site, and seemingly everything was fine in terms of, you know, it's kind of a simple website, and I got the application done, and now I'm trying to figure out what plan to go with. And I called Maximus Inc. today.
Did you?
Yes, I did. And because I don't trust the private insurance companies, and I find that trying to get a sense of the provider network, you know, whether or not my current doctors and the hospitals I'm going to are in a particular plan's network is a very difficult thing to figure out, because a lot of the websites it's a very confusing, you know, search engines that they have. So, I've been asking all my doctors, I've been going to the various hospitals, I've been telling them I'm going into the exchange, and I'm looking at this particular plan and that particular plan, and they're all saying, yep, we carry those plans. So I'm like, okay, so that's good. So, and then I'll do a search online, and they're not popping up. The doctors, might come up, but not the hospitals, and it's very confusing. So I'm on the verge of selecting one of the plans. I said, I want to be doubly sure. So I call Maximus Inc. and finally get somebody. They're very rude.
and naturally, the check already cleared, Darlene. They don't have to be nice anymore.
They don't have to be pleasant. And they have a quote-unquote broker who can help me select the best plan. Okay, well, the broker's busy with somebody else, will call you back. Okay, fine. So 2 minutes to five. And by the way, Maximus Inc. says they're available from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. So even, you know, if you're going to call me at 5 or after 5, the broker will be able to help me because they're available till 8 p.m. Well, the broker gets on, and I give her the information. I said, these are the plans I'm looking for. Here are the doctors. Here are the hospitals. I want to be absolutely sure they're in this plan. And, okay, so she starts searching. She finds the doctor, but she doesn't find the hospital that the doctor's in. And I said, well, how could the doctor be there but not the hospital? Well, he's billing you separately. She gave me some bullshit excuse. I said, that doesn't make any sense. The hospital bills me. Well,
I'm wondering, Darlene, at what point the absinthe enters the, or maybe, you know, I don't know, morphine or opium or, Jesus, LSD.
Well, a long time ago. I am like, well, there's so much more to it, because I said, well, okay, here's the other plan. Well, she goes, well, I need to leave in 5 minutes.
Excuse me?
She says she needed to leave in 5 minutes. I'm stressed out. Right now, my blood pressure is skyrocketing because the particular hospital is vitally important. They're the ones that are tracking my muscular dystrophy. And the doctor, I've been with him for a while. They're going to have clinical trials hopefully soon. And, you know, I go there for physical therapy. Now she's saying they're not in the network of this particular plan, and she has to leave in 5 minutes. I said, excuse me, I said, but you, Maximus said they're open till 8. She goes, well, not us, not the brokers. So she's leaving me flat.
Oh, the janitors are there till 8.
Well, I was so furious because I said, go. And I just hung up. I said, I did the search myself, and I found the damn hospital. Within 2 seconds, I found the hospital. She screwed up. She screwed up. Now, if she can't do the search right, how am I going to do the search correctly? Because what I learned from her in the, you know, few minutes I had her there before she had to run home was that, and this is what they're not saying on the exchanges, is that you have to input very specific information about the plan. So when you want to search for your provider to be sure they're in the particular plan network, what we do is we click a link and it takes you out of the website, and they tell you we're going to take you out of the exchange website into the provider's website. Okay? So you go into the provider's website. It's like a whole different website. Some of the providers actually have the exchange plan listed, so whatever you plug in, you know is for the exchange. Other providers, the one that I was actually thinking of signing on to, doesn't do that. So you go to do a search you have to put in a specific, and I didn't know this, and they're not telling you this, you have to put in a specific designation. And this designation was pathway, okay, get this, pathway X/IND, which I guess means individual, PPO via exchange. There are several there are several of these types of designations. How the hell am I going to know that particular designation? And then when you click that in, another menu drops down, and lo and behold, there are the little various plans that are on the exchange. And you plug that in, and now you're in the right search engine, and you can put the doctor's name in.
God, this is more complex than playing Myst was.
Right, and they don't, but they're not telling any. They're not telling anybody this on the website. And the sad thing is that the other thing this broker told me was that when I talk to my doctors and my hospitals, the hospitals that I'm going through, I have to be very specific about the plan itself. Like, I can't say to them what I've been saying to them is, I'm going into the exchanges. Do you carry, say, Blue Cross Blue Shield? Yeah, sure, no problem. I said, it's through the exchanges, so yep, we're good. No, that's not enough. You have to give the exact, you have to say it a certain way. They're not telling you this either. You have to say Blue Cross, Blue Shield, gold level, for example, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, gold level, direct access standard dash CDDK. They have to be in that exact one. And guess what? The hospitals and doctors don't know this. They don't even know this. According to this broker, they don't know this either. It's all new to them. So they're sitting there thinking, oh, it's Blue Cross Blue Shield generally, but it's not. So even the providers are ill-prepared. So all
Okay, so with all of the frustration you've dealt with, darling.
Mm-hmm.
Has the universe afforded you any time just to sit back and sort of, in doing your best Zen Buddhist impression, contemplate how such a system gets built?
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking that from the... do you mean, like, the medical system itself, or the exchange system? Like, what?
No, the exchange system, what you've been mm-hmm. trying to negotiate. I mean, we had, I think it was it Andy that wrote last night talking about, you know, he said, I write code for a living, and this stuff is astonishing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I heard that whole thing, and you were talking about, like, why aren't, it's almost like they don't have real people trying to work through these things to like, troubleshoot them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and just to be clear, because apparently I hadn't made it clear, because, you know, you catch stuff real quick. No, I was, when I ran across the business with the Roman numeral 2,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't dealing with some, you know, hillbilly cut and paste, spit and toilet paper and a little bit of barbed wire website the state of West Virginia put up.
Mm-hmm.
That is a website that encompasses the entirety of the United States of America who do not have their own exchanges that doesn't have the Roman numeral 2 in it.
Yep.
I mean, that's a ruin your foot on the furniture moment.
Exactly.
And you know, Texas Betsy just chimed in, Darlene, and she said, single payer, many all caps, many exclamation points, and then paren, not sorry for shouting.
Oh yeah,
because my impression, based on what I've experienced, what you're describing, and there are apparently states where it's work, you know, just click humming along like a little machine. Kentucky's doing very well, thank you. Is that the problems arise here, not because of healthcare delivery, but because of some proprietary need to game the system in such a way that the right for-profit healthcare companies get the right patients.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh yeah.
And so once again, we see proven before our very eyes the benefits of a single payer system.
Exactly. And you have, you know, Governor Malloy, who I voted for, he's a Democrat, and I'll probably vote for him again because what wants to run against him is frightening.
Yeah, because Governor McMahon just fills you with a sense of creeping dread, right?
Yeah. It's Foley is his, I think it's Foley, and he is he's nuts. He's a Republican, and he's frightening.
All worried about the lady parts and so forth.
He throws out all these accusations, and there's no basis in them, but he expects people are going to dig up enough dirt to make some kind of a scandal. And he also did something where with the recent election of de Blasio.
Yes.
He started advertising in New York about, come to Connecticut, because there's this belief that all the rich ones are going to, all the rich people in New York are going to start running for the hills because of this, liberal mayor that's been elected for New York City. So come to Connecticut, come to the Fairfield area, you know, we'll take care of you kind of thing, which basically I think is his way of trying to stack. Because it's the southern part of Connecticut, believe it or not, that really carries a lot of Democrats. Up here where I am, it's heavy Republican because it's rural areas. So usually it's the lower part of that, the southern part of the state that carries a lot of, has a lot of Democrats, and I think we're predominantly responsible for voting in Governor Malloy. So I think he's trying to kind of, fill up that part of the state with more Republicans, trying to draw them. That's what he did. He sent ads out in New York. Come to Connecticut, please. We'll take care of all of you rich one percenters.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, but Malloy, speaking of Malloy, he is trumpeting how, Connecticut, quote unquote, got it right with the exchange website. And it's bullshit. It's just bullshit. Of course, if you're comparing this to the debacle of the federal site, well, I guess it's kind of a low bar, too. So, you're going to smell great. You're going to look great compared to the botched rollout.
The bar is already so low that it has to be excavated with trowels.
Exactly. So I'm really troubled by this, what I've seen so far, and if you've got a broker who's supposedly hired by this private company that's supposed to know her stuff, fucking up a search, excuse my expression.
No, that's okay in these circumstances.
Screwing up a search, how are you going to expect, the regular schmo on the street, like myself, to really be getting accurate information? Because there's probably a lot of people who are plugging in these doctors' names, these providers' names, thinking that their provider is in this exchange plan networks. And they aren't, because they're probably not putting the exact designations they're supposed to be putting in there.
Right. I mean, that's similar to what I experienced that I was trying to explain last night. I wound up, Agnes and I have four kids. One of them is in excess of 21, and she has her own family, so okay, three kids. Well, the next one is 19, soon to turn 20. That leaves two under 18. Well, by the time I was done, I had a family the size of the freaking Waltons because it kept replicating my children.
Yep. And then that just delays things. I don't know if you're on a time, if there's a time a restriction for you that you have to sign up by a certain time in order to get, because I'm sure you want to get coverage right away.
I would like to get covered and know that I have coverage and start scheduling stuff, the day the doctors come back from New Year's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I don't want a break in my coverage. I've been asking, I needed access to gastroenterology services this year. I wound up getting colitis earlier this year. And so I've been working with a particular office. I think I'm finally in remission. And so I've been asking this doctor's office repeatedly, double checking if they take the particular plan I'm thinking of getting. Oh yes, no problem. Well, I just discovered that apparently they're not in the exchange plan because I didn't say it right. You know, I didn't say it properly as to what exactly the exact plan name is. So,
You messed up the incantation, darling.
Exactly, and I screwed up, and I got to call the nurse and say, look, guess what? The plan I'm, and it's not like there's a lot of choices. There's, I think, only three insurance companies, and we're in the insurance capital of the world here, right? Connecticut?
Sure.
Right? Okay, there's only three. There's Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, there's a Healthy Partners Network, and there's Connecticut. And I was leaning towards Blue Cross Blue Shield that's got like a 4 or 5 star rating. And then the other two are unrated. Aetna, which is a sleazy company, Aetna dropped out quick.
Yeah, they're the ones that killed the little girl by refusing her liver transplant a few years back, I think.
Yeah, that's actually, you're right. And they were in it, and then they pulled out very quickly. And I have a friend whose wife works there, and so they're all covered by Aetna Insurance, and he said it's horrible. It's an awful, horrible insurance plan. It's the worst. So they probably.
And I guess Connecticut is your answer to Medicaid, right?
It's not. You're saying it might be like a Medicaid type plan?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's private.
Oh.
They're all private, and that's the other thing that's, you know, that's why I keep asking and I keep questioning, because I just don't trust what I'm seeing. And it's really sad, because what I'm losing was a Medicaid based plan. Believe it or not, it was started by the last governor, who was a Republican, Jody Rell, and she started what they called a Charter Oak plan. And I have to give her some credit there, because that helped me out, because I make too much to be considered poor, or, you know, with the poverty level.
Yeah.
But I don't make enough because I have pre-existing conditions. So basically, I've looked into insurance plans, and I went uninsured for quite a while because I couldn't afford, you know, basically what amounted to a second mortgage, and was even more than my current mortgage. And she instituted this plan called Charter Oak for low-income adults with pre-existing conditions. So I was able to get into the Charter Oak plan, and it sucked in terms of its provider network, but I didn't realize how really good the benefits were until I got onto the exchanges and started looking at what they're offering on the exchange here in Connecticut. So the sad thing is that it took a lot of years for Charter Oak to kind of build itself up, but it started getting good. It started getting more doctors coming into the plan, more hospitals, and there were more choices. And bam, you know, as soon as the ACA was coming to town, Malloy and the Connecticut legislature, they immediately are ending the program at the end of this month. And
oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, and so it's not like they didn't even allow, like, you know, couldn't they have given it maybe 6 months to a year just to be sure the exchanges were working okay? You know, no, they just ended it, bam, right away. And the excuse they used was that there weren't very many people enrolled. Well, enrollment did drop, but it was when I first got into Charter Oak, it was heavily subsidized, and I think I was paying about $289 a month for it, okay? And that was okay. That was good. And then Malloy got in, and taxes went up, you know, income taxes, all of that, state income, everything. And I was fine with that, except he was not making, again, and this is a Democrat, okay? So I'm kind of disappointed in this. He's sort of like a business-oriented kind of Democrat. He is progressive on social issues, but the more I'm kind of seeing, it's like he wants to bring in business, so he's given a lot of major corporate tax breaks and all this crap to bring in corporations. And he did not do the same with the wealthy. The 1% did not get as much of a tax hike as the rest of us did. And I was okay with paying the extra. That was fine. But what happened was when my insurance through the Charter Oak came around for renewal, I got renewed, and then all of a sudden they sent me a notice that they're hiking the insurance $143. I'm like, wow, that's a pretty substantial hike. Okay. So you add that on to the $289 that I was paying. Okay, so I don't know, it was bringing, around $400 or something. The following year, they hiked it another $141. So I was paying close to so I went from $289 to $589 in less than a couple of years because they were taking all the subsidies away.
Taking the subsidies away in order to make it more unattractive so that people will get off of it.
Precisely. So here they are. Well, you know, enrollment decreased. You picked right up on it. Enrollment decreased. Well, why do you think it decreased? It's because you took away the subsidies. So then they're saying, well, enrollment decreased, so there's nobody using the plan, so we're gonna trash it as soon as the ACA kicks in. Okay? And then I had to laugh because they approved me again, but only for 2 months, because they're ending the program, on December 31st. And it said that I was still subsidized. And I'm thinking, you gotta be freaking kidding me. I'm paying almost $600. You're saying I'm still subsidized? What subsidy is left? You know? I mean, I was kind of like, I'd love to know how much you're subsidizing, but in a sense too, I kind of viewed that as an additional tax because, quite a substantial one per month because, by taking that subsidy away, I had to shell out more money per month in addition to all the tax hikes that I was paying, you know, into the state. So it's sort of like an additional, kind of, I view it as like an additional tax. It's not really being called that, but, you know, it's more money that's going out of your pocket because, but they're causing that because they're taking away those subsidies. So, you know, I was paying a good price for the plan, but again, more doctors were getting into it. It was like it was starting to kind of take off. If they had not taken away those subsidies, I think that would have been. It would have been decent.
Yeah, and you know, this is another one of those object lessons, Darlene, in the failure of the free market. Because mm-hmm. if your plan had been left in place, well, that means that you and others enrolled in it would not be thrown upon the tender mercies of the for-profit insurance industry.
Exactly, because looking at what I'm seeing on the exchanges, there are no freaking way I would have left Charter Oak. There's no way I would have. For anything that I'm seeing, because, you know, you're looking at $1,000 deductible. I don't like paying deductible. I don't like it. I'm paying quite a bit in insurance. When I see insurance or the car, or the home, whatever, I don't like that.
No. And one thing I would suggest as in sort of the broader universe of this topic, Darlene, is that once again, a lot of us as progressives are, and I don't mean you, I mean maybe me, are doing a not very good job of using, because the right wing is going hammer and tongs. Oh, see, that Obamacare don't work. You're going to die in the streets.
Yeah, so disingenuous.
Right.
Our argument.
Okay. So where's our argument that no, the problems with the rollout are proof that the only real answer to this problem is universal single payer. Why are we not howling this from the rooftops?
Well, poor Bernie Sanders is trying to.
Well, yes, he is, and you know, when we mention Bernie Sanders, we have to mention Jim McDermott from Washington in the same breath because he introduced the companion bill in the House.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you know, this leads back to that down the rabbit hole problem that we seem to have, Darlene, in that a whole bunch of the people in the United States understand what the answer is.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who don't understand what the answer is are the people who are paid not to understand it. Yeah. To wit, the Republican teabaggers and various and sundry yahoos in the Congress, and maybe, it gives me no joy to say this, maybe even Barack Obama himself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he hung out there at the University of Chicago so long that he thinks that the free market is the answer to all questions. When A, it ain't free, and B, it creates more problems than any question it ever answers. Because the only question
the free market seems able to answer is, do you have, is, if the question is, do you have enough money, the free market answers, if you don't, too bad for you.
Well, you know, he's priding himself on, quote unquote, saving 1/6 of the economy. That seems to have been his motivating factor, right?
Yeah, but Darlene, that's a bullshit.
I'm not saying I'm agreeing with that.
No, but that's a bullshit answer.
Yeah.
You know, because the fact of the matter is, you can have universal single-payer health care insurance, and every one of these godforsaken private insurers can have a piece of that pie administering the universal single-payer under a set of rules promulgated in Washington for everybody in the country.
Yep.
And it can take in pre-existing conditions. Well, I mean, just say there's no such thing as a pre-existing condition. Boom, the pre-existing condition problem is gone. And if everybody is enrolled in it from birth, then you don't have these yahoos with their pornographic Uncle Sam videos out there trying to talk 20-somethings out of signing up for insurance.
Mm-hmm.
If you're enrolled at birth, everybody is in the system, and therefore the cost problems that accrue to age-based insurance go away, don't they?
Yep. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you can see, like, this Medicaid-based plan that I was on was far superior in terms of benefits. I mean, it's very stark contrast. And, you know, I'm hoping other people will see this as they go on to the exchanges and look and do the comparison. Now, granted, the plans I'm seeing are cheaper. They cost less, about, you know, $100 or more dollars less per month.
Yeah, but what's the deductible look like?
$1,000. And what's really frightening is that they don't cover the medication that I need to keep my my colitis in remission. Right now I'm getting it covered, and it's extremely expensive. It's $978 a month.
Jesus, I wonder what it is in Canada or Mexico.
Exactly. And so if you do the math, right, the basic math, right, and you know, I had to take pharmaceuticals a while, a Toprol for tachycardia, but I can't stand taking any kind of, I don't want to be owned, you know, by a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
I don't like it. And I said, I hope to get at least into my 60s before that happened. And so I was extremely upset this year when and I don't know how I got the colitis. I don't know where it came out, where it came from, but now I'm basically owned. How I see it, I'm owned by a pharmaceutical company because I'm taking this Lialda, and I'd like to take a chance and go off it and see if I could go without it. But it took me so long to get into remission that the doctors are hesitant. Now the gastro office, which now is potentially not the plan that I was going to choose, they're hesitant to have me stop taking it. So when you're looking at $978 a month, that's a mortgage. That's another mortgage for me. That's more than my mortgage.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
So if you do the math, right, if say the plan I'm looking at is about, what, $478, but the medication, the drugs cost $978, okay, I'm already in the red for them. They're already operating at a loss with me. So guess what? They look at these, even though these it's like a, what is it called, mesalamine? It's a generic version, a mesalamine. I'm not saying it correctly, but it's mesalamine. That's a generic version. I don't even think they cover that, but they don't cover this. It's called Lialda. They don't cover it.
And it's sure not on the $5 formulary down to the Wally World.
Exactly. They know this, though. They figured it out. They know the most expensive drugs, and they know how to crunch those numbers so well that, you know, we can make sure that, you know, Darlene's paying her, you know, $500 a month or whatever, and as long as we don't cover the Lialda, we're going to make a profit on her. You know what I mean?
It's right. Like,
they know.
Right. And they're, you know, right. Oh, look, capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's all about wealth transfer from you to them.
Yeah, and it's forced wealth transfer, and it's very stressful, and I don't need the stress from this, but I'm extremely disappointed in what I'm seeing, and I would have been able to pay a little bit more for less of a deductible, you know, for a lesser deductible, but they're not offering it. It's all very limited. They don't even have a, they have the gold, silver, and bronze. And when I called Maximus, I said, how come there's no platinum level? I was curious to see what that was because I kept hearing there's a platinum level out in the world. You know, I thought that the government was talking or I heard like on NPR there's platinum, gold, silver, bronze. There's nothing like that. I said, well, why isn't there? And, you know, Maximus was like, oh, it just isn't.
Well, you're getting an inquiry in Darlene from Texas, Betsy, who's curious because of experience she herself had when she was unemployed. What about the drug company itself? Does it have any sort of program to help you offset the cost or anything like that?
Yes, tell her thank you for asking that. Yes,
you just did.
Thank you, Texas Betsy. Yes, there is some possibility that I have to fill out an application. I think it's called Shire Care or something. And I looked into that and I talked with the gastro office and said, I think it's usually like you're 400%, 100% of the poverty level. And I said, I'm not near that. You know, I'm making more than most. And she said, well, still fill out the application because a lot of people who thought that they weren't eligible actually became eligible. So I got to fill out that application now, run it up to the gastro office, and they're going to do their piece, and we're going to submit it and see what happens. And I guess that the nurse practitioner said that the Lialda company is a great company. I was like, okay, yeah, sure, pharmaceutical company, yeah, all right. But they
pet kittens and everything.
Yeah, they try to work with people, that kind of thing, and they're trying to figure out, they must be addressing issues concerning the exchanges, so they're going to talk, the nurse is going to talk to them. And worse comes to worse, they have samples there at the office that they can give me. So, but I don't know how that's going to change because I don't even know if they're in the plan that I'm looking at. I might wind up having to go to Connecticut, which another private insurance, which I hear is a real tough group. A lot of people do not like them. And I was going to go apparently Blue Cross Blue Shield supposed to be better, but if the gastro office isn't in that network, I'm forced to go to Connecticut. And so I'm kind of feeling stuck. So unfortunately, I guess my next step is to go straight to the sleazy source and call the insurance companies directly. I got a couple of numbers. I want them to tell me specifically who's in their plan and who isn't on the exchanges. I want to hear it from them because I would think they're in the know. They're going to know directly who's in that specific plan and who isn't. So that's
You know, the other side of that coin, though, Darlene, is just to go back to what I said a few minutes ago. We have to, and I'm not trying to propagandize you. I hope you understand.
No.
We have to make these stories known.
Exactly.
Not as a reason to get rid of the idea that Americans deserve to all have health care, but to say that the profit motive inside health care has got to freaking go.
Exactly.
But the only answer is universal single-payer health care.
Exactly.
And
hope is we're getting there. I'm hoping that, you know, because I personally, I'm not sure these private insurance companies are going to, I don't know if they're going to reap a lot of benefit from it. Because
well, they're not going to behave well because they're insurance companies.
Right.
And there's next to nothing, and because it's all operating state by state, insurance commissioners, I mean, I'm sure you've got an object lesson in Connecticut, Darlene. Insurance commissioners are tired insurance executives
mm-hmm.
whose only desire in life is to occupy a government seat with a government check and do as little as possible. I mean, it's Governor LePetitmaine from Blazing Saddles all over again. Boys, we've got to keep our phony baloney jobs.
Yep.
I need a harumph. You just got a tweet from Sandra who says, Darlene's situation is an outrage. And it is. It is. And, you know, you're having trouble with the exchange in Connecticut. I read a story the other day about the exchange in Oregon, and the exchange in Oregon is apparently just, you think you got problems department.
Yeah.
They can't even make the website work at all in Oregon. And they haven't been able to, and the turn-on date was October the 1st.
And they blew right past that and said, well, October the 15th. And then they said, nah, November the 15th. And November the 15th came, and they said, December the 1st. No, really.
And in keeping with the lack of information being provided to the consumer, I'm not hearing a lot about extensions. Maybe I'm just not hearing it. I don't know, maybe they are talking about extending deadlines for signing up, because originally I had to sign up by December 15th in order for my coverage to start
January
1st. And so I'm like kind of panicking, so I say I'll spend, you know, part of today working on it, and I'll call tomorrow. I'll start, but then when I got onto this Maximus Inc. phone here, their phone system, apparently it was extended, oh big deal, to the 23rd of December. And I'm like, okay. So I questioned the woman when I finally got a human being there. I said, which is it? The 15th or the 23rd? That's the 23rd. It's been extended. I'm thinking, okay, I never heard anything that it's been extended. And you know what, Bob, I don't even trust that. I still feel like if I wait till the 23rd, I'm going to get screwed.
Oh, no, you dare not.
Dare not wait till the 23rd?
No.
Yeah.
You know, this is the 12th. I would treat the deadline as being the 15th.
That's right.
And make them put it in writing.
Yep.
You know, I'm not barking at you know.
No, I know. I know. No,
but,
I know.
But that, and again, that may be the single takeaway from a lot of this is whatever, make them put it in writing.
Yep.
Kill a tree, make some paper, sign it, send it to me.
You know, and then
Sandra did just tweet in, and she said, yes, December 23rd is the new deadline, supposedly.
Okay, thanks, Sandra. Yeah, and that's still not enough time, in my opinion, because, again, we're being ill, and at least here in Connecticut, I feel we're being ill-informed. And it sounds like it's not as bad as what you're describing in Oregon. But I feel like people are going to be making choices. They're not going to be well-informed choices. That they're going to be stunned when, you know, oh, well, I'm going to go with this plan, and they walk in and find out that actually their doctor or their hospital really was not in that particular plan via the exchange. And so, you know, it's sort of like you're being forced to have to call a Maximus Inc., you know, in order to, you know, it's like you really can't do this solely through the website.
Well, sure, and so much of I think that a portion of some part of all of this problem is the fact that it was thrown together on an ad hoc basis. Okay,
they had so much time. See, that's the sad thing. They had a couple of years. They had time. And I don't know. Again, does this go back to the Obama administration? They're real piss poor.
Yeah, but this is Maximus and they're a private for-profit company, and time is money. And so if you start training people 2 years ago, that's 2 years of payroll. And the whole point to this is to cut, so that you can maximize the welfare that is being handed to the for-profit insurance industry. The guy that I dealt with the other day when I called in, and it takes, Darlene, I hope you know, it takes a lot to make me throw my hands up in frustration and pick up the phone and dial. Because I figure, you know, I mean, I don't write code or anything, but as a reasonably intelligent human being with an IQ above freezing, I should be able to get through this website.
Yep.
And so when I finally got a guy on the line, listen, I'm just going to say this. It's pretty obvious to me that this guy was slinging pizza the week before. Okay, I don't know what work pool they pulled these folks out of that are answering the phones at the Affordable Care Act, but all I got from him was, well, I'm still waiting for your page to load.
Mm.
And he would tell me that every 5 minutes over the course of 45.
That's what the broker kept saying, it's taking a while for this to load. I'm thinking, huh?
I'll be damned. Okay, well, that's interesting.
It's taken a while, yeah, and... Yes, and I did it in 2 seconds. After I got off the phone, after I hung up on her, I did it in 2 seconds. I got once I knew the proper designations to plug in, bam, the hospital popped right up within 2 seconds. So I don't know what the hell.
And I'm sure that there is some, but there isn't with what I'm dealing with to make my son the second turn into a junior or a swan prince or something like that and make this whole damn thing work. But I haven't found that combination yet. And the guy who, for the fifth time he said your page isn't loading, I said, listen, let's just talk turkey. We don't have to have my page in front of you. I can explain to you the problem.
Yeah.
And so it sounded very much like he was improvising really, really on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
When he said, look, just put your son's name in and put it in and click that yes, that's how it appears on his social security card. He said the system will spit it out and say no, it's not, and then you'll scan his social security card and upload it to us and everything will be groovy.
Yep.
Oof.
Yeah, and then of course mine didn't know how to properly input information, and all she cared about was going home in 5 minutes, and I'm stressing out. I'm like, you gotta be freaking kidding me, you're leaving me like this? Like,
yeah, and Texas Betsy just said, people will be oh so grateful they have an opportunity for insurance that only 1 in 100 will do the legwork that Darlene did.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that's what's so scary, because a lot of people are gonna be making these decisions that are not, you know, they're ill-informed.
Well, you know, Darlene,
it's not their fault. It's not their fault.
You communicate, obviously, very, very well. Have you given consideration to getting hold of, you know, the Nutmeg Daily or whatever the local paper or Action Eyewitness News Team 12 that isn't Fox and saying, listen, you know, I want to do this as a public service?
That's a good idea. I mean, I was so furious with the broker that I got
Seven on your side, their consumer affairs.
Consumer affairs.
Those people are desperate for stories.
Because I called Maximus back to make a complaint against the broker. And I sat on the phone. Yeah, I sat on the phone for quite a while. I was listening to your program, and I was on the phone forever. And I was like, okay, I wrote a vent. I'm going to vent a little bit to a good friend of mine in an email. I kept hearing the same recording over and over again. Finally, the phone started ringing. This is probably about an hour on the phone I waited. Phone started ringing. Nobody picked up. Kept ringing and ringing. I said,
that's because you're supposed to give up and hang up.
Well, yeah, but there's a load of crap. They're there till 8 o'clock. You know, no, they're not. It was like a little bit after 6:30. Nobody picked up, so I hung up. I think what I'm going to do is call the, because I'm thinking Maximus isn't, they're not going to do anything to this. They're not going to do anything with this broker. So I'm going to call the health advocate's office. The previous person was in a Kevin Lembo. He was really good. He was a really, really good. He's a state health advocate. So I'm thinking of calling that office and making a complaint. And, you know, because I'm furious.
But I think I really do. I'm not disputing that idea, Darlene. But I think taking it to the media would be a good idea. Hell, I'd put it in writing and send it to Bernie Sanders and Jim McDermott if I were you.
Oh, that's a good idea too.
You know, write the same account and send it to several places.
Yeah.
Because it will be surprising to them. Because wherever you send it, knowing you, I've gotten a lot of emails from you over the years, and our conversation is quite lucid and coherent, and I'm probably less coherent than you are.
No.
But any of those offices that see communications that are not filled with capital letters and 19 exclamation points and vulgarity about the Affordable Care Act tend to get more attention than others do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a file that says sane people and another file that says teabaggers.
Well, honestly, the email I sent to my friend had some capital, like, sucks. The website sucks, that kind of thing. But I wouldn't do that if I were sending it to, a news source. I'd be a bit more judicious in my word choice. But, I feel like I'm furious as a Connecticut taxpayer being kept from, you know, what should, I think technically should be freedom of information type of stuff.
How much did we pay for this really crappy system?
Exactly. And for this company that is rude and they're not giving you the proper information and all they care about is going home and leaving you flat, you know, not giving you, you know, accurate and complete information on how to utilize the system properly. I'm ticked off at that. You know, Vermont did it. They let their people know, you know, how much they were paying.
And I think people in Oregon even know what a boondoggle that is.
Yeah. So.
But I would add one little caveat in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this, and I hate to even think this paranoidly, but the fact of the matter is, there is an element out there on what is supposedly our side who will take any criticism of the Affordable Care Act as some sort of proof that you mm-hmm. don't sufficiently love Barack Obama.
Right.
So I would just be wary of, in terms of language,
or being twisted as another.
Yeah, right. Or twisted or attacked by the Democratic machine inside your state.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me sound like Alex Jones, and I don't even like sounding that way, Darlene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has been a magnificent conversation. I hope you will update not only me but all of us on how this process works out for you.
No, thank you. I mean, I have to make a choice. So again, I view it as a step down from what I presently have, and I'm very upset. Like I said, I'm upset that they should have just extended the Charter Oak plan for a year just to be sure things were working well with the exchanges. I just think that was really short-sighted, and but I'm sure there's a monetary.
Yeah, and by the way, you got some confirmation a little while back from our buddy Jeremy, who is in Vermont, and he said, yes, the Vermont exchange was all FUBAR, so much so that it was shut down for a couple of weeks so an outside firm could fix it. Meanwhile, call the 800 number. He said, I shit you not, my employer was on the phone with them on and off for a month with no real answers to any questions they asked. That being said, I am now fully covered.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Meanwhile, Kate, who always turns the cube in a different direction and looks at it from another side, Kate says, this call makes me feel so grateful to live in extreme poverty. None of this makes any sense to me. I'm on Medicaid. In order to feel okay about the state picking up my expenses for the scanty and adequate coverage, I do volunteer work. I figure that I save the federal and state a great deal of money by advocating for needy people. I have a doc who knows not to put me in a hospital nor give me extended care in emergencies. I explain my wishes to her one more time. She smiles knowingly when I go in for my annual blood work. I'm a good friend of the supervisor of the best hospice unit here in town, and I am so grateful to be old. And she says, by the way, and this is a check your privilege Bob note, by the way, lots of folks who make pizza have college degrees. And that was, I don't know how to adequately describe how untrained and absolutely unprepared and wholly ignorant this individual sounded when I called him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's so much for my shorthand. I get called out on my privilege, and correctly so. Darlene, have a lovely evening.
Yes,
and let me just take a moment to personally thank you for all the help you have been in keeping this all afloat for so very long. It is much appreciated.
Okay, well, I'll be doing a support thing soon, so before the month is out.
Well,
so I'm just trying to wait.
Not to worry. I just wanted to, since I was actually humanly talking to you, I wanted to thank you.
And thank you for keeping us posted on Bill. I'm really still worried about him, you know. So I hope we'll feel a lot better if I heard him, that he actually spoke with somebody from the Horn family and could articulate how things are going. But I'm sure you'll keep us posted.
And we're trying. One of the things that's tripping us up is the fact that nobody's inside the HIPAA loop in order to be able to. And you know what? Nobody needs to be in the hospital by themselves ever. Because that decision making process, let alone coverage, that decision making process is complex enough.
Yeah, but I thought it was a good sign that you said he was being taken to the hospital to his consternation.
Yes.
I thought that was a good sign in terms of him having his wits about him, and you know, because I could sense he didn't want to be. Taken to the hospital, and he needed the help, and I kind of got that sense that, you know, that might have been the best thing. Somebody said if it was a stroke that he got there within the hour or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was being ornery, it sounds like, and that's to me a good sign.
Exactly. Although by the same token, in talking with Agnes about it, she said, you do know that stroke victims can be extremely combative, right, Bob?
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Oh, so yeah. That could be, yeah. So
because Jugapunch reported later that the following day he was saying that he wanted a cab and wanted to get home. So there are hurdles here that need to be leapt, because, among other things, and he wrote about it in the chat room, so I don't think I'm betraying any confidences. He can't even talk to the social worker, because they won't tell him who the social worker is because of HIPAA.
Right. So we're in an information deficit here. In terms
exactly.
Of what's going on, and you worry too, because if they sound like they're sedating him quite a bit. So you know, because it sounds like he was sedated before, and he's sedated today, and you know, because you said somebody went to visit him, right?
Yeah.
So
that was Joe.
You know, yeah. So yeah. I don't know that. Why? You know, it's a little concerning, but
yeah. But sometimes rest is the best thing you can have.
Is the best thing you need. Yeah. So.
Well, Darlene, have a lovely evening, and thank you for the call, and thank you for the account. I really appreciate it.
Okay, you're
all right,
welcome.
Take care.
All righty.
Bye now. Darlene, calling from Connecticut, longtime friend and member of the Horn family commune. A little bit of time left. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob. How you doing? Todd from Doylestown.
Todd, how are you?
Oh, doing okay. Hey, I was wondering if you had a match that I could borrow so I could possibly throw it on a good gasoline and get a fire going here.
Who's the lucky candidate?
Well, nobody, but everybody in general, maybe. I don't know. I was a former software engineer, designer, coder, the whole bit. You know, in listening to the last caller, first of all, okay, I agree there is no reason for any of this stuff to be going on. In defense of what's actually happening, making minor changes to a big program, that could have far-reaching tentacles that have to be followed all the way down, and it may not just be as easy as...
I mean, is this algorithm-based stuff, or, I mean...
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, if you say that, for example, you're using... bringing up the second as a an ending to your son's name. If that's being pulled from a database, well, okay, then that needs to be stored in the database, so you've got two changes there. One, you need to present it. One, you need to store it. And then every place that is accessed, there is a potential change that needs to be made to the code to access that additional postfix that's on the name. Just throwing out a rough example there. And when you go through, and this is where I'm, you know, all up with the torches and the pitchforks with you. The company that they hired from the private sector to put that one together really screwed it up, and it's always twice as hard and twice as long to go back and try and fix something rather than to start over and...
Yeah, unscrewing, you know, is always a bigger job than screwing.
Right, because you got to unscrew it and then screw it back in. That's a very good analogy.
And I guess the question is, was this just too big a job? I mean, if it was, then why are some of the some of the state-level exchanges clicking right along? I mean, all you hear is good things about Kentucky, and Kentucky's not a place you hear good things about very often.
I don't know. I would assume that it would have been a hell of a job to probably put this thing together. I wouldn't have wanted to do it, or wouldn't have wanted to have done it, but... you know, does that mean it was impossible? No, they probably just hired the wrong firm. I don't know if it was a no-bid contract or somebody was...
Well, you've got the outfit up in Canada, and I can't remember their name. And then, of course, somewhere along the way, Booz Allen Hamilton got their sleazy, greasy, greedy mitts on it. And that can't be anything but bad. These are the people who pitch billion-dollar programs to spy on World of Freaking Warcraft to the government.
Yep, there you go. Well, I can't say it not having, and God only knows, I don't even want to do it, but looking at the code, but I can imagine it would have been a heck of a mountain to climb. Plus the fact...
What would that be written in, Todd?
It could have been in Java. It could have been in a .NET language, a C#. I've been out of it for a couple of years. I don't know if there's anything newer that's come along, but... there's a variety of them, or it could have been multiples. The front end, the presentation portion of it, could have been written in one. The back end, to access the database, could have been written in a second language. There's a whole bunch of different ways of going about it. Really all depends on the company that you hire.
Oh, God. Well, Randy just told me, wrote from PA to say, Montreal's CGI is the firm, the Canadian firm. And, of course, there was something dodgy and sketchy about them opening up an office somewhere down in central Texas. And I just asked what the language might be, Todd, simply because, I mean, I went on to the healthcare.gov website, and while I don't, I think we all have a pretty good idea of what we expect websites to look like now. This thing mm-hmm. looked like a website from 1999.
It happens. You get people who don't keep up with the trends and the newer ways of doing things. I'll use air quotes, but the better way of doing things, a lot of time it is, well, sometimes it isn't. Yeah, it happens.
I mean, I do a little bit of reading, just enough to realize how little I know, Todd, and I've read a bunch lately, articles about the rise of HTML5. Is that what it is? That's supposed to replace Flash and all of this other stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But honest to God, just for the fun of it, because I'd be really interested in having a report back based upon your expertise, just for the fun of it, jump onto healthcare.gov and just wander for a few pages and come back and tell me if this looks like a pro job. Am I imposing on you?
Oh, not at all, because Kathy and I are due to sign up for it here before the deadline anyway. We're going to be muddling through it anyway.
Well, so I think if you're using the federalhealthcare.gov site, and you're in Ohio, right?
Correct.
And y'all signed on. Do you have your own exchange, or did Kasich decide to go Fed?
Kasich decided to go Fed, to the best of my knowledge.
Well, then in that case, as long as neither you nor Kathy have a Roman numeral 2 hanging after your name on your Social Security card, you should be okay. But I really would. I would, if you report back and say, Bob, you're an absolute boob, here's the workaround, or how did you miss this, I'm okay with that. Because, you know, I can't comment on blog posts that use discuss. D-I-S-Q-U-S? Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Just can't. It's terrible, awful, horrible. But I don't think this is my screw up. But if you would be so kind as to report back on it, I think it would be really neat for people to hear from somebody with some expertise.
Well, I'll be happy to do that. I don't think you're the one that's at fault, but I'll be happy as we snoop around there to take a look and take down some notes and report back to you.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Hey, newsflash, real quick. Kevin says by email he just talked with Bill, and he sounds a bit drowsy but talks fairly well. Missing his teeth, doesn't have him in the hospital, so I think that's a major problem with his speech. He does want people to call. I asked him if he wanted me to give his hospital number out. He said yes, but I'm thinking he doesn't need to be overwhelmed with calls just yet. He didn't talk long. He's a bit drowsy. He's doing as good as can be expected, Kevin reports. And I don't think they take calls after 9 p.m., or that's what I was told when I called them. But maybe by tomorrow we'll work out some weekend outreach or something like that. Todd, I really appreciate you. I really do. I appreciate the expertise. And
you're welcome.
I look forward to hearing back. You guys have a wonderful evening. Say hi to Kathy for us.
Will do. You do the same, sir.
All right. Take care.
All right, bye now.
And we are fresh out of time. And hopefully maybe tomorrow for Friday on the front porch we'll get a Mr. Stress update from Kevin, from Jug of Punch. I'll try to reach out however we can. Got to get out of here now. Thank you again to Karen and to Sal, who helped us with $30 worth of tonight's $150 fundraising goal. It is much appreciated, and overnight, if we could reach that before we get to tomorrow, we'll be staying out of the hole. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. Here comes Rick Smith.